skip to the end.
Welcome to episode 58 of the Skip to the End podcast. As ever, I'm Ben.
I'm Gemma.
And I'm Mark.
And we go away for 3 weeks and the whole world changes. Cataclysmic world events have occurred in our absence. And I can only assume those two things are related. I can only assume that we should never do this again. We shouldn't go away for 3 weeks. Is it our fault?
There's no other link. It has to be down to
it
us.
It has to be our
Sorry,
fault,
guys.
Isn't it?
Hashtag blame Mark.
Yes.
We'll be trending worldwide.
But all those cataclysmic worldwide events aside, all I want to say is let's work hard, let's work together to make the podcast great again.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, yes, we can.
Good, good. And in the 3 weeks that we've been gone, Mark, you've been on a jolly. Where have you been?
I've been to Barbados.
Oh, yeah. How was it?
Swimming with turtles.
What, actually, teenage mutant?
If you'd looked on my, I'll put it on Instagram, but I actually touched a turtle head. So that was really nice. And then we went on the day out. But no, it was amazing. The sun was shining. They are the nicest people I've ever met in my life. Uh-huh. It was just everything I needed. A real well-earned break. But I didn't switch off completely. I was still editing while I was there. And it sounds ridiculous, but it's like I've missed it more than I've ever could have imagined, you know. Aww. And to come back to see you both is such a nice experience. And now I'm like, let's just take this to the next level and show the world we're even better than they thought. You know? It's weird. Like, an extra week feels like a lifetime.
It really does.
Just rolling back to the fact that you were editing on the beach. What did your wife think of that? Seeing as you'd taken her on this lovely holiday to Barbados and you had your head in your MacBook.
She is MacBook, that is. Apple MacBook. Yes. She's fine with it because it was only a couple of days instead of the usual 7 days a week. So it was just like, as long as you're still taking me out for dinner tonight, that's fine.
Good.
But on the note of me being away, I mean, Gemma went to Canada.
I did.
Came back. It was just about halfway through your probation, I think.
It was.
You didn't bring us back anything.
Yeah.
Because I'm selfish like
and
that.
And she said I didn't have time.
Uh huh.
So when I went away, there was a difference.
Yep.
I brought gifts.
Oh my goodness.
So obviously I went to the man in the bar and I said, can you tell me what the best rum is around? Because they're known for their beautiful rum.
Yeah.
So I got you both a bottle of Mount Gay.
Nice.
Stunning rum. And the guy in Barbados who drinks it as a living, because he's literally hammered all day, said to me, this is the best stuff you can buy. So Gemma, there's a bottle
goodness.
For you.
Oh my goodness.
And Ben, I got you
much.
One.
Thank you very much.
I feel hideously bad now.
That's the difference between me and you.
I'm hideous.
But yeah, enjoy that. It's
Thank
supposed
you.
To be the good stuff, you know.
It
I was drinking a lot of stuff like that while I was away. So there are other drinks available. But hey, you know, Mount Gay might give us something, unlike Strongbow.
Yeah. That's Mount Gay.
You're listening to the Skip to the End podcast, sponsored by Mount Gay Rum. When you want rum, make it gay.
So, we are back to it then. Let's be honest, the world has changed in the last few weeks. I don't want to be political. I don't want to talk about all that.
This is
the reason people listen to us, to escape all that crap.
We don't care what your political viewpoints are. We don't care what race, religion, creed, sex, sexual orientation you are. We don't give a shit. As long as you love movies, you're in the right place.
And hello.
We're here. Indeed. We are here for you. Let's get started.
So to kick things off after this lovely long 3 week break, let's get into a thrilling topic. See what I did there?
Yeah.
Top three thrillers. And yes, I did use Michael Jackson. Of course I did. I was looking at other stuff as well. I was literally looking at other songs with thrilling or cheap thrill and all this or hold me, thrill me, kiss me, kill me. All these songs I thought, nah, let's just stick with what's the best, you know, thriller.
Yeah.
Now I'm going to put it out there straight away. I think you guys struggled. This is not an easy topic, and this is the one where it really was a case. I know we exaggerate sometimes, but I have 10, 15 to try and get that down to 3.
Yeah.
Then I saw the social media stuff come in, and I feel really bad for leaving some of them out. My list is currently at about 5 or 6.
Christ.
There's 3 in pen that is there, and the penciled ones are those ones where I'm like, oh, it's felt so bad. I'm going to throw it straight to Ben, and I'm really, really excited. There's going to be crossovers, I think, but
yeah, I think
give
so.
It to me.
I've got a feeling there aren't going to be. I think because thrillers is such a wide open topic, I've got a feeling we're going to have 9 unique choices here.
Okay.
But I might be able to put my foot in my mouth right away with my choice because I think it's going to be a popular one, possibly on the internet, on the social media. First of all, I'm going with Memento.
Oh.
Not got it.
Not me neither.
Good start.
But it's a great shout.
It's an absolutely magnificent film. So it's a 2000 film directed and written by Christopher Nolan, starring Guy Pearce and Carrie-Anne Moss. For those of you who haven't seen it, just to give you the gist of the film, it stars Guy Pearce as this character called Leonard, who was in a house robbery. Someone came in to rob his house, and they raped his wife and hurt his wife. And they smashed his head against the cabinet. He fell to the floor. When he woke up, he then had a very weird form of amnesia, which prevents you from forming new memories. His wife is then dead, and he's trying to find the killer of his wife, all the while not being able to remember things past a couple of minutes. So he does this by writing notes on his body, getting things tattooed on him and writing notes that are in his pocket, taking Polaroids of major events. And all that is great. But the key selling point of the film is that it's told in reverse chronological order. So you see the end of the film first, and then you go back a few minutes and see what happened there. And then you skip back again and again and again. And it just, the tension builds. And the best part about it for me, the reason why it's one of the best thrillers, is because you know as little as he does. Because Leonard can't maintain these memories, and because we keep going backwards in time, we're learning things effectively as he is. As he's bringing them back to mind by looking at his notes, looking at his Polaroids, we're learning it for the first time as well. We are completely in the dark, just like the character, and it's masterfully done.
Yeah, seeing it through his eyes the whole way through is amazing, and it seems weird, but it's still quite unique. That when that came, I remember people going, oh, it did my head in, I couldn't get used to it, and I didn't know what way to watch it, and I wanted to be able to watch it backwards, and different people wanted to do different cuts and this, and I saw people on YouTube trying to do that and actually piece it together differently. And it seems strange that no one had really done something like that before. It's quite like, wow, fair play, Nolan. Mm. And even to this day now, even though that film's that many years old, it still hasn't really happened again in that kind of context. And it just works so well and was so unique.
Yeah, I think if anyone tried to do it now, they'd just be accused of ripping it off.
Yeah.
No one could do it now without just being told, oh, you're a second-rate Memento. I believe on the Memento DVD, there's some way of accessing the film in chronological order.
So the
opposite
way
around to the actual broadcast version of the film. You have to press a certain key combination on your phone to access it or something, but it does exist. But I don't know what the value would be.
No.
What's the point?
Yeah. No, it is. I mean, the definition of a thriller is to excite you. And I think this is probably the perfect classification of that word alone. Mm-hmm. There is no other way to watch this film than skipping to the end. Mm-hmm. But it really does. It's a masterclass of suspense. And it almost kind of, in a way, adapts what we used to see in Alfred Hitchcock's film back in the 50s, 60s as well. And it updates it to such a modern, contemporary way that it's very hard to imitate. It's very hard to try and pass it off as your own. This is a masterclass of a thriller.
Yeah. And it really, really kick-started Nolan's career. It was only his second feature film after Following, but it was the one that really got his name known. It was the one that made Hollywood take notice. And that's why he's had a career ever since.
It's mad, isn't it, seeing how he's come on so much since that film. But I didn't like Following. The main guy's accent was really annoying, and it's just a film I didn't really get into.
Yeah.
But as soon as I saw Memento, I was like, oh, my God. And then I got to see, obviously, Insomnia and then Batman and The Prestige and all of it. I was like, oh, this guy's incredible. I am looking forward to Dunkirk as well.
Yes, me too.
Apart from one of the members of One Direction's in it. But I'll put that aside.
And he got his hair cut and everything.
And
the girls are really upset.
Oh, God, grow up. Yeah. Jesus. Come on, you call yourself girls. Pull yourselves together.
Moving on from that, Gemma.
Yes.
What's your first one?
Okay, my first film is a Jack Nicholson classic, Chinatown.
Ooh.
Now, this film, it is in my top 10, and it nearly made my top 3 list of the 70s. But this is fantastic. I watched this for the very first time when I was at uni. I had studied this film for my film studies class. And for those of you who have not seen it, it's basically about the story of a murder that occurs with a high official in a water and energy department. So Jack Nicholson's character, Gitters, is employed by the dead man's wife, and he almost takes a bit of an investigation as to how this chap died in mysterious circumstances. And it's a story about corruption. It's a story about murder. And it hides a very, very dark family secret as well. So for those of you who have not seen it, you might want to block your ears for about a minute. I'm gonna essentially ruin the end of it.
I've never seen it.
Oh, then in that case, I'm not going to say anything. No, you know what? I am actually going to leave it there because I have a feeling this may be a future rewatch.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm not going to spoil it for you. Mm-hmm. But you do not imagine what happens at the end from the very beginning scene. This is so good in the fact that it keeps you guessing. You are Gitters. You do have to kind of uncover these secrets in every scene that unfolds. the suspenseful nature of this whole film is just wonderful to watch. And you would never guess the end. And that's why I think I would like to employ it as a future rewatch for you guys. Maybe in the new year. But I'm not going to spoil anything. But it's the fact that it's shocking. It's exciting. There is so much devastation in the film that I don't want to say when it is. But I hope for those of you that have seen the film, I'm pretty sure you know exactly what I mean. But it is a film that you just can't ruin the ending. And it is worth every single penny that you might have in order to buy the DVD or go and watch it in a cinema that is showing it. It is absolutely wonderful. The fact it is directed by Roman Polanski, okay, you know, a little bit controversial, but tell you what, he knew exactly how to play this film. It is wonderful.
It's an odd thing, the whole Roman Polanski thing, because everyone knows he drugged that kid.
I
probably shouldn't have allegedly that. But you know, he's been on the run ever since, and he's only making films in like Croatia or some shit now.
What was the last one? It wasn't The Pianist, was
but,
it?
But people,
or Piano or something.
But people still, they give him a pass. Like, he turns up for these continental award ceremonies and so on, and people give him a pass because he makes good films. And it's that thing of, can you overlook the fact that someone's a scumbag just because they make good art?
And that's what really frustrates me about this film, because this film is a work of art. It really is. But the guy's
tarnished,
just a
isn't it, really?
Douchebag.
Yeah. I'm really glad you didn't ruin the end, though. I'm glad I stopped you, because it is one of those ones that is on the list.
Me too. It's on my list of things that I've been meaning to watch for years.
And I always see it on the top 20 films ever made. People always say how good Jack Nicholson and people are. So we'll put it on the list.
And as well, you've got Faye Dunaway there, who is we'll watch this in the future, guys.
Brilliant. Well, I'll kick mine off with one that I thought maybe you guys have chose, because it's one of the most iconic thrillers ever made. And the reason I chose it was just because I was on the edge of my seat and it thrilled me for 2 hours, 7 minutes, whatever it is. It's Seven.
It's on my list too.
Oh, is it? We have got an overlap then.
Yeah, it's on my list as well.
Wow. Brilliant. Now, the reason I chose this, like I just said, it was done so well, but the cast itself, Morgan Freeman, that guy could talk to me about someone taking a shit and I'd listen to it for hours. Like, his voice is made for absorbs me. It's incredible. Like, the documentary he did on penguins was just incredible. And it's
so good.
I forgot I was even watching penguins at one point. But then you've got Brad Pitt, and I think Brad Pitt at the moment has not been doing the best stuff he's ever done. No. But back then, when he did Seven, he was at the sort of peak of his career, and I think, you know, that and Fight Club and stuff like that was outstanding. Yeah. But then Kevin Spacey as well, as the psycho sort of murderer who plans everything to an absolute T. And it is the way that he portrays all those seven deadly sins and the gruesomeness of that thing. It seemed like one of the first films that I remember watching where I was literally like, oh, that's gross. Like, that is so disgusting. When there's that massive fat guy who's been in all those chains. It is literally disgusting, all the barbed wire. And you think, it just looked real. Where some films nowadays, because they will use CGI, it was done with, you know, prosthetics and you had all the decent the effects that have been made, and it just looks so good, but it gripped me the whole way through. And we'll always talk about the end, and it's impossible, if no one has seen it, to avoid this spoiler. It's up there with Sixth Sense.
Yeah.
The wise head in the box at the end.
What's in the box?
But that whole scene, the long panned out shots of him driving through in the UPS van, or everything about that, my heart was racing. I remember the first time I saw it, no one had spoiled it. I didn't know what was going to be in the box. I was thinking, what the hell is it going to be? You kind of have an idea, but then the moment that you see Brad Pitt's reaction, the way he's looking forward and backward, and he can't quite actually like digest that it's actually his wife's head.
And you just don't know how he's going to react.
Oh.
That's the best part of the film. You genuinely don't know if he is going to become wrath, as John Doe says, or if he's going to just let him be taken in by the authorities. You genuinely don't know what decision he's going to make. But either way, he loses.
Yeah.
He's in a lose-lose situation. There's no positive outcome in this scenario.
Mesmerizing.
It's incredible.
I saw this film for the first time about a year ago, maybe a bit longer. I think it was homework, back when we used to do the old homework feature. And I think you picked it for me, Mark, and I had to go away and watch it. Or it might have even been a rewatch, but it was certainly on the podcast.
I think it was a homework. Yeah.
And I went away and watched it. And again, you know, it had been one of those that I'd heard a million and one people tell me how great it was. And I just assumed it could never live up to the hype, but it really is as good a film as you can imagine. It's one of the best directors in the business, Fincher, and a murderer's row of talent in Spacey and Pitt and Freeman. Mm-hmm. Fantastic.
It's amazing when you just read those three names. Exactly. Who else could you add to that? Mm-hmm. It's just perfect. What a trio.
And as well, like, what I love about this film as well, it has one of the most disturbing opening credit scenes I think I've ever seen in a film as well. And it kind of sets the tone for the rest of the film. It's so jarring and so, like, with even with the score that they use as well, with like the really high-pitched noise, like, what I equate to nails on a chalkboard just every now and again. It is terrifying. And you say about the prosthetics, the guy that is starved to death, almost starved to death, and it's one of the biggest jumps I think I've ever seen in film where you think he's clearly dead and I think one of the SWAT team even pokes him with a gun. Then he moves and just groans.
Yeah.
And oh, terrifying. One of the jumpiest scenes I think I've ever seen.
That and the face in the boat on Jaws. Oh, those two moments, yes, that literally still get me. Even though I know it's coming, I'll watch it again and it will suddenly get me.
Definitely.
Every time.
Great Seven. Choice.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, big time.
What you got next, Ben?
I'm going to be a fancy boy now. I'm going to have a foreign film. I've gone for the French thriller from 2005, Cachet.
Okay.
Have either of you seen this?
No.
No, I'm afraid not.
It's an absolute masterpiece, and it's directed by the Austrian auteur Michael Haneke, who also did Funny Games and...
Sold. Yeah. I want to watch it already.
It's a very odd film. So it's about this French couple who are very sort of bourgeois literary couple. I think the wife is a literary agent and the husband runs a TV show where they have literary discussions. And they're played by Daniel O'Toole and Juliette Binoche. And then one day they're at home in their lovely palatial Parisian estate and a videotape arrives on their doorstep. They play the videotape and all it is a two-hour-long shot of the front of their house. So someone has clearly set up a camera in a road adjacent from their house and just filmed the comings and goings, which kind of freaks them out. What's this about? What's going on? They put it out of their minds. A couple of days later, another tape arrives. And again, it's the same thing. It's just a shot of their house. But this time it comes with a kind of a child's drawing of a childish face with blood being spewed out of its mouth. And again, they're thinking, what the hell is this? The next video that comes through is someone driving a car to the bloke's childhood home. So whoever it is that's leaving these videos, they now know that they know this guy's childhood. They know where he came from. They go to the police and say, you know, we've been getting these tapes, someone's stalking us. And they basically say, well, until someone attacks you, there's bugger all we can do. And it's all about finding out who it is that's been stalking them. And more importantly, why. What is that person's connection to this couple? And I don't want to say any more. Again, much like with Chinatown, I don't want to say any more because you two haven't seen it. And I really want you to go away and see this because it would spoil it entirely if I told you anything more. It's an absolutely brilliant film. Michael Haneke is, as I said, an auteur. He's a master. The framing of his shots is amazing. It's pretty much all of the shots are static. There's very little camera movement. And any time there is, it's very simple movements. There's nothing flashy, nothing showy about it. He doesn't allow you to see anything he doesn't want you to see, if you know what I mean. There aren't pans and whips all around picking up loads of extraneous detail. He shows you exactly what's vital, and that's all you're going to get to see. And because of that, there's sometimes you're focusing at what you think you should be looking at, and there's something else going on behind. And again, I don't want to say more than that because it'll ruin it, but it's so tense. There's just this underlying tension, not only in the stalker plot line, but also in the marriage of these two people, because this kind of... They seem to have a relatively stable marriage, if not a happy one, but this tape or the revelations that the tape brings puts a lot of strain on them. So you see how it affects them and how it affects their son. And it's brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant.
I want it now.
Take my money.
It was, I think it won a couple of awards at Cannes that year, 2005. It was put forth for the Austrian entry for the Oscars, but the Oscars being the idiots that they are, they turned it down because the film was set in France, but it was put forward by an Austrian director. They refused to accept it as the Austrian entry because they said it's in French.
Oh, for goodness
sake. So it didn't get nominated for an Oscar, although it would, in my opinion, would have undoubtedly won the Best Foreign Film Oscar. It's a masterpiece.
I really
want to see this. I kind of wish you'd just like surprise that on us on a future rewatch. Yeah. Because that would have just, wow, that sounds, exactly. I'm sold.
Mm-hmm. Oh, there's nothing wrong with being fancy when it's that good.
Yeah, Cachet, check it out.
Well, I'm just writing that down now. Yeah. And that's literally my future. Well, I'll probably watch it tonight. That sounds absolutely awesome. Yeah. It's back to me. I'm sorry, I kind of cut over you.
It's
my next choice is a film I've talked about many a times, but it is a masterpiece, and it's probably the closest film that's ever got into my top five without making it. So it's always at number six, mm-hmm. and it's Leon.
Yeah.
Leon the Professional, as some people refer to it, but you know, the full uncut version. I remember buying this on Region 1 DVD from Movie Time back in the probably about 2005, and I remember it was a case of you couldn't get this uncut version anywhere. In the UK, when it came out, it was the standard, you know, an hour and a half, and this was an extra 40 minutes. I mean, you hear about films now like Batman and Superman having an extra 25 and Suicide Squad 15. This is another 45 minutes. It felt like a completely different film with all this stuff in there. And it's not just stuff that you think, oh, he's just binned it off, you know, like Apocalypse Now, where you could still tell the same story. I think it adds a lot more to the story. I think it completely changes it for me. There's obviously the most famous scene where he wakes up with Matilda and you kind of, oh God, it casts a doubt on how close he really got with her, which is a bit too close to the bone. And that scene I'm fine with being left out. But also when he trains her to become like an assassin and start shooting off the top of the building, that scene is extended. And I think that was crucial to really seeing her take on this role and live life through his eyes. And I think the film itself is absolutely fantastic. Mm. To know that Natalie Portman was so young and, you know, I just can't... I don't see that as Natalie Portman anymore. It's weird. I know it is her, but I always associate with her like Black Swan and that sort of acting.
That's
now.
That's sign of a good actor, surely.
Yeah, it's great. Mm. But the whole film, the whole ending again, and most people I'm sure have seen Leon by now, gets me every time. I'm literally nearly in tears. To know when he... Oh, it's incredible. The grenade, he still goes out a hero. He's born a hero. He lives a hero. It's perfect.
And again, it was another one that I hadn't seen until a year or so ago. And again, it was homework that I was given on the podcast.
Ben actually had never seen any films until
we did this podcast. Not a single one.
And now look at him, he's one. Like a film Jedi.
That's why we started the podcast, so that I could see a film.
What is film? Well, Ben, we're going to start a podcast just for you. He's done well in 2 years.
You've come so far.
But I bloody loved it. Again, it was one that you gave to me, Mark, and I couldn't have been happy with it. It is astounding to think that Portman was, what, 12, I think, when it was made, 12, 13?
Yeah, crazy.
And she just seemed like an actress twice her years. Mm-hmm. She was absolutely amazing. And the rest of the cast as well.
It's incredible.
Yeah. It is.
Absolutely perfect. And it's that film that I will always watch once a year. Mm-hmm. I know we joke and say there's some films that we watch loads and loads. That is one I'll... Yeah. Like Gremlins at Christmas and Die Hard, it's one of those films that whatever happens, they'll be... Like you with Blade Runner.
Yeah.
Whatever happens, it doesn't have to be a certain time of the year, I'll watch it. Perfect. Gemma. Yeah.
Yes.
You've got to sit out, but you can tell me if you like Leon. Do you like Leon?
Love Leon. Who doesn't? If you don't, you're dead inside.
Perfect. Is it you now, Ben? Mm. Oh, yeah, it is. Sorry.
Yeah, it's all right.
Yeah, it is. It's my third and final one, isn't it? So I'm going back to 2000 yet again, this time for Unbreakable.
Oh, great. Great choice.
I think, objectively, people say that The Sixth Sense is the best M. Night Shyamalan film. But I think this, I wouldn't say it's his best, but I think Unbreakable is my favourite of his films. I don't think it's as strong a film as Sixth Sense, but it's certainly the one I enjoy the most. For those of you who don't know, it stars Bruce Willis and Samuel L. Jackson. It's really a very unconventional superhero origin story. It's about a guy who survives a train crash, played by Bruce Willis. He's the only person who survives. I think a couple of hundred people die or something in this train crash. He then gets to thinking about the fact that he's never in his whole life been injured or ill. He's never had a cold, nothing like that. Then a guy approaches him, played by Samuel L. Jackson, who starts asking him about this and asking him, have you ever thought about why this might be the case? Effectively putting forth to him the idea that he might be essentially a superhero. And he bucks against this, of course, but then he starts developing these kind of extra sensory powers, a sixth sense, you might say, to then notice when bad things are going to happen. And that actually makes it sound more action-packed than it is. It's a very quiet, very slow film. There's only really one big action sequence towards the end when he finally comes to terms with who he really is, that he is this hero. Not a superhero, but a hero. But it's a brilliant film. And I read something recently that said that Shyamalan actually wrote the film. He wrote a script, but he didn't like the second and third act. He only really cared about the first act, which was the origin. And that's what this film became. So this film really was only one third of what he originally wrote.
Bloody hell.
And I think now, I'm glad for that. I wouldn't have liked him to then try and put more in between Bruce Willis's character and Samuel L. Jackson's character. Because by the end of it, spoiler alert, Samuel L. Jackson then reveals himself as the person who caused this train crash because he was looking for this hero. Because Samuel L. Jackson's character has this degenerative disease that causes his bones to be really fragile. So he looked at it like, if I'm the person on Earth that is incredibly weak, there must be someone at the other end of the spectrum who can't be hurt, who's incredibly strong. And so he goes out looking for him and causes these disasters. And I like that that's how the film ends, that you find that out and that's where it ends. If they would have then gone on and they then battled, I don't know what that would have served. I don't know what more that would have brought to it. It's good that it ends where it does, I think.
Yeah, I think if it was 10 years earlier, it would probably been like a trilogy of some sort.
Mm-hmm.
I still get very depressed by this film for the fact that how good it is to how much shite he's releasing now.
Yeah.
And I still can't believe it's the same director, because I think Sixth Sense is a very, very well-made film. And you watch it again and again and you're like, wow, it did trick me the whole way through. But Unbreakable is his finest piece of work. Like, Bruce Willis gave a performance that was Oscar-worthy for me.
Yeah.
And in a lot of films now, he is just doing any old shit. He's like Nick Cage. He's literally doing anything. Yeah. Literally any old shit. And it's kind of that last film where you see this great direction. Samuel L. Jackson is like nothing he's ever done before. He's not this comedic, kind of over-the-top, stupid, just comical. He's not. He's so serious. But the story itself gripped me. And I love the fact he's that comic collector and he goes to his house and he's showing him all these amazing comics. I was like, wow, look at this. This is so cool. But like you just said, the story, it just got me.
Yeah.
It was just like the fact that he couldn't be broken. And it's when he's realizing, he's like, you've never had a cold. You've never, I think it's his wife saying to him, like, you're never ill. And he's just starting to dawn on him. Mesmerizing. Yeah. Why don't we get good stories like this anymore?
I know. What I've heard is that the new Shyamalan film, Split, have you heard about this?
Yep.
Yes.
That stars James McAvoy. I'm hearing good notices for this. It's getting really, really strong reviews.
I hope so.
Not necessarily as strong as the reviews for Unbreakable and Sixth Sense, but it's far better than anything he's done in the last decade.
Oh, fingers crossed, because, I mean, even the first trailer suggests to me that it's something I want to go and watch. I think it's got
legs.
It
looks different. It looks like it's got some more thought and budget to it, because what's the last one he released with that family? Where
the Visit.
Shite.
But people said that was good. It got reasonably good.
And people said that
reviews.
Was the film that is his return. It wasn't his return. Check the box office. There was no return. But no, I'm serious. It was shite.
It's a return to my car.
Yes.
Oh, God. So if the film would have been good, you wouldn't have returned to your car. You'd have just left it in the car park.
That's when you know if she likes a film.
Yeah. It's like,
there's a ticket saying you've left your car here for 3 weeks. Yeah. It must have been good.
Casually strewn Corsa.
Jesus. Oh, Unbreakable, man. That's another film I'd love to rewatch again, as a group, because it is just perfect, and it is such a shame to look back now and think that guy is literally doing nothing.
And like you said, Bruce Willis's performance. Not that long ago, one of our movie masturbate conversations was Bruce Willis's best performance, and I went with 16 Blocks, which I still agree with, but I'd forgotten how great he was in this, because I rewatched all three of my thriller choices this past weekend, and I'd forgotten how moving Bruce Willis is when he's not phoning it in, how moving he can be, how good an actor he truly was.
Yeah.
What I say was as if he's dead. He's just stopped trying.
His career's dead, though. It is. Yeah. He's doing literally those straight to DVD that you laugh at. Shocking.
Yeah.
Don't blame Kevin Smith for Cop Out. That's not the one that started it. There was a lot of shite before. Terrible. So Gemma, back to you.
Yes. Okay, so I've gone for an Alfred Hitchcock classic. It's not the obvious one being Psycho. I've gone for Rear Window.
Ooh.
Okay.
I've never seen that.
It's my favourite Hitchcock.
This film, it's more about the slow burning process of it. So the in and out of this film is we follow a guy called Jeff who's in a wheelchair after an accident, a keen photographer. He people watches the apartment that he's in. So he observes particular people's lives as he's wheelchair bound. One night, he suspects that one of his neighbours has killed his wife. The people around him think he's going a little bit doolally because he's been in his house so many hours of the day. But certain events start happening, and the suspicion of this guy killing his wife starts getting stronger and stronger. And it's just really following that sort of slow burn tension. Did he do it? Did he not do it? And you really have to sort of stick until the end of the film to really get that payoff. But did he? Is it just his mind going crazy? Or is this man who lives across the street from him really a killer?
And I think that's it does what the best thrillers do. And that's it leaves that open. Some thrillers kind of miss the point by giving you more information than you should have as the viewer.
Exactly.
They give too much away too soon and then there's no impact. You want that gut punch at the end of the film. And that's what the best thrillers do. They withhold that information to put you in that mindset, whereas you know as little as the central character knows.
And you almost have to feel exactly how that main character is feeling. And I feel with Jeff, you start becoming paranoid and you go, wait a minute. That's a clue. Surely that's more proof saying that this guy actually did it. And then you get the secondary characters come in and try and talk you out of it. You are Jeff. You're, and as well, the fact that he can't even leave his apartment because he is wheelchair bound, terrifying, claustrophobic. And I think Hitchcock certainly ramped that tension up all the way through the film with this disabled character for a moment.
Is this the one that The Simpsons did when they got
a
new swimming pool?
Yes, it is.
And I was about to say that I remember the first time I saw this film, probably about 10 years ago. I was watching it thinking, this is familiar to me. Is this a remake? And then it dawned on me, The Simpsons have done it.
He gets the brand new swimming pool and everyone's having the time of their life. Yeah. Amazing.
And then you find out that scream wasn't a woman's scream, it was Ned Flanders because his pansies had been damaged.
Oh, this is one of those films that I need to watch. I'm a big fan of Hitchcock, but I've not seen them all because there's so many.
Yeah.
My wife bought me a box set on DVD for Christmas and it had like 40 of his films in it. It's like all real thin cases, really nice box set. Mm. And I've tried to work my way through them. There's so much on there. And this is always in the top, literally 10 films ever made as IMDb. Yeah. All these films always rate this as one of the best films. So I'm looking forward to seeing it. It's just, I'm not in a massive rush to see it. There's a lot more I want to see before it. But you just talking about it there, I can see how much suspense and how much...
Definitely.
Like, it sounds thrilling.
I think because it certainly breaks the mold from other Hitchcock films because it's definitely the more colourful, more campier version. And then, say, for example, when you compare it to The Birds or Marnie or Vertigo... It's just that payoff. The payoff is probably up there as one of the best Hitchcock films, I think. You do not see what happens until the very end. Yeah. You really don't.
Top three payoffs, that should be a future topic.
Write that down. Now.
Amazing. I'll watch it and then I'll come back one day. We haven't got homework anymore. If we did, it would be one that I'd now write down and definitely come back. I'll finish off the topic with a 2005 film directed by someone we'll be discussing on our rewatch, David Cronenberg, History of Violence.
Unbelievable.
That's such a good film.
Now, it's probably in my top 10 all time.
I mean, that's why I kind of like this, because you'll tell me it better than me, but it's the fact of the three lead performances for me. Obviously, Viggo Mortensen.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I just gotta get these names right, come on. Maria Bella.
Bello.
Bello, close. Bello. And obviously Ed Harris. Now, those three, for me, there's not one that shines above the rest. All three of them are fantastic and unique in their own way. Ed Harris, I've never seen someone so harrowing and so scary.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm loving him in Westworld and I'm loving him back on the screens and I've missed him.
He reminds me in Westworld of how he was in this film. I think
it does. It really does. He is harrowing. He scares me. And that doesn't happen for a lot of films. It's not horror. Mm. It's a crime thriller. We see Tom, who's got the history of violence, who comes across as that kind of nice family guy. And it's only the fact he becomes a local hero through violence that we then see his actual repercussions coming. Because God, it opens a whole can of worms. His wife, played by Maria, is absolutely outstanding. And there's this sex scene that they have on the stairs.
Oh, yeah.
Which is, it just leaves, I'm not going to say it's not like a porno that makes you feel hot. It is done so well that you are literally feeling the pain of her, that he takes it too far and he's so physical and so forceful. It's not rape.
No.
Because they're married and she is not saying no, but it's raw. Intense.
Yeah.
And everything about this film is absolutely on the edge of the seat. And I don't think there's a better film out there by David Cronenberg, by these three, that have delivered such an amazing performance where there's not one person that's outshined the other. And that's a hell of a thing to say when you've got these three big names.
I love this film. And as I say, it's probably in my top 10 all time. And I just forgotten it when we did this list. Thinking about it now, it should have been in my top three for this particular feature.
You know George Lucas it?
Because I absolutely love this film. Cronenberg did a back-to-back 1-2 punch of this and Eastern Promises, both of which
are
amazing.
Eastern Promises is fantastic.
Yeah, both starring Viggo Mortensen, superb films. This one, the direction is so good. There's the scene, I think it's right at the start of the film, when you've got the two criminals in the car that go into the...
The slow driving.
Yeah, the slow driving. They go into that rest stop thing, whatever, and they go, oh, God,
it's so tense. Mm-hmm. Amazing. And that's what Cronenberg's good at. Yeah. You know, he can create... We'll talk a lot more about Cronenberg shortly. Stick around for that. But, you know... This is just stands up, but like you said, it's in your top 10 of all time.
Yeah.
There's, what else can you say?
And the violence, you know, as it's in the name, History of Violence, some of the fight scenes. So the main character played by Mortensen is a guy who used to be kind of a mob enforcer, a mob hitman, but he's now moved into the suburbs and left that life behind. And when Ed Harris first turns up, who's one of his old employers or enemies or something, he starts saying, oh, you're really Joey or whatever his name is. And he's like, no, you've got the wrong guy. But then it kicks off. Two people bring out guns and... Mortensen just vaults over the top of the bar and he's just snapping arms and oh my God, the violence is so visceral.
Yeah.
You see the bones just crack and jutting out of the body parts.
It's almost not like Hollywood either. This, if that situation happened, that's exactly what you would see and experience.
Yeah.
And I love the fact that his wife had kind of convinced herself that he was a different man, that he had changed, that all that past could just go away. And then that instant of that fight, it reminds me a bit of Con Air at the start when he gets in the fight outside and kills people, but it's that instant of you're not going to let that past ever get away from you. And then, wow, well, Unbelievable.
So good. Oh, I'm going to watch that tonight.
That's the problem with us. We're recording on a Sunday. That's not a big secret. We've got work tomorrow and it sucks because we go home and I'm like, right, I want to watch Rear Window. I want to watch this. I want to watch that.
Unfair.
Well, we did well, I think, to get it down to three. I mean, that was one of the toughest we've had around.
Yeah.
Good time.
And as always, now we're going to be reminded by social media of the ones we should have probably picked.
We are. So... Now, forgive me, whoever this is. I'm going to take a crack of your name, and if I get it wrong, yeah, apologies. Zvorsky Daniel said, thank you.
Mark's saying yes, as if he knows.
I just like the fact she's apologised. I would never apologise. Then it's not like you've done it on purpose.
Put a disclaimer, keep it keen. Well, he said, Jacob's Ladder, I Saw the Devil, and Seven.
Yeah.
Then we've got Christian Steele that said, To Catch a Thief, Leon, and I can't believe none of us picked this one, Silence of the Lambs.
Yeah.
Amazing.
It had to be
That's probably my fourth or fifth
choice. Yeah, same here. Then we got Kevin Dillon, The Fugitive.
Amazing.
Yep.
The Negotiator.
Amazing.
And Breakdown.
So 90s. He's like me with the 80s. Nice one, Dillon.
The Comic Guy, he gave us their suggestions. Leon, Cape Fear, and another Hitchcock film, North by Northwest.
Yeah. Amazing.
Cape Fear is a great film as well.
Lewis Carney said Prisoners. Now that is on my... I need to watch this. I still haven't watched
it. The Denis Villeneuve film. Mm-hmm. Yes, so good.
Still need to watch it. 1 Hour Photo. Great.
Oh. Yeah. Yes. Robin Williams rules in
that. Wow. Yes. And 10 Cloverfield Lane, a very recent film.
Not great.
Then we've got... finally, we have a Hulk. And they said Usual Suspects,
yeah.
Rear Window, and Seven.
Amazing.
Oh, good.
I didn't want to pick Usual Suspects because we talked about it a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
But it was kind of the one that would have easily have been on the list if we hadn't talked about it literally on the last episode.
Great subject.
Next topic. It's down to you, Gemma.
It is me. So a lot of things have happened since we've been away.
Yeah.
But we don't need to go into that. We're going to talk about the film side of things. So on the next episode, I want you guys to come back with your top three most shocking moments in film.
Oh, my God. I was going to do this as a topic. And I was going to call it...
Go on.
Top three what the fuck moments.
I was going for a PG-13 rating.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Or jaw droppers.
Yeah. But I basically want you guys to come back with some scenes where you go... The fuck?
Yeah.
Yes, you know? That's incredible.
Nice. Very good.
Now I need to come up with something else, though.
I love it. So next time, top three most shocking moments in film. We've been to our local View cinema to watch Arrival, the Denis Villeneuve new film for the end of the year, and many people are considering this to be a possible Oscar contender. So before we go into this, I'm going to do a little disclaimer. For those of you who have yet to see this, times are available on our website, so you can essentially skip to the end of this particular point and listen to it later on. But for those of you who have, Arrival. So... The plot of the story is a number of giant spaceships have landed in various countries around the globe. An elite team in America is assembled, which is led by linguistics expert Dr. Louise Banks, who's played by Amy Adams. And they're going to investigate why these spaceships have arrived and what they want from Earth. As mankind faces the brink of all-out global warfare, Banks and a team must face a race against limited time to get answers from the intergalactic visitors. The results could mean not just a threat against Banks' life, but for the rest of humanity. So this film, as said, has Amy Adams, Jeremy Renner, and Forest Whitaker as the stars. So, where do we begin? I'm going to throw it at you, Mark. Oh. Here you go. Catch this.
Nicely done, by the way.
Thank you.
No, not the intro, just throwing it to me. I like
Brilliant.
That.
Brilliant.
Really well. Whoa, this was quite a testing film. I think it's a very, very slow burner for me. I'm not sure if I loved it. I don't think I did. I didn't hate it at all. I'm kind of a bit on the fence. I've just come out of seeing it. I'm still quite fresh, trying to get my head around it all. I wish I could kind of have a sleep and kind of not be jet lag and really get my head around it. I did enjoy it. It was sci-fi done well, which is not easy. I don't know. I'm a bit all over the shop with this one. I wasn't blown away. It didn't deliver the film I was hoping it would, but I wasn't completely let down. I'm just a bit underwhelmed.
Okay, Ben.
Yeah, I wouldn't go as far as to say I'm underwhelmed, but it wasn't quite as good as I thought it was going to be. I expected it to be like Contact, you know, the Jodie Foster, Matthew McConaughey film. Mm-hmm. It seemed on the surface it was going to be a lot like that. In reality, it turned out to be very interstellary.
Okay.
Which is not a good thing.
Okay. That's exactly what it was.
Yeah. I enjoyed large parts of it, but other parts of it, it didn't quite work. It didn't really coalesce into a whole for me. Good, not great.
Okay, so I have a bit of a confession to make. I actually watched this about 2 weeks ago due to a special screening.
How very dare you.
I know, I'm a bastard.
While I'm away, you know what I mean?
Christ. Selfish. So this was the second time I'd seen it. Mm. So the first time I saw it, I immediately walked out the cinema and I said, that's the best film I've seen this year. I really thoroughly enjoyed it. Second time today, I enjoyed it, but not as much as I remembered.
Mm.
Because for those of you who have seen this film, I think a second watch is worth it because there are things we're going to be talking about in a bit that make sense when I say you need a second watch of it. It is good. I do think it is in the running for one of the best films this year, but I didn't enjoy it as much as the second time.
And usually I'm like, oh, wow, after the mm-hmm. second, if you come out thinking that's one of the best yes. films of the year, probably the best,
and that
I thought you'd
me.
Be gushing even more today over nope. this. I thought you'd be like, wow. Yeah.
No, not so at all.
That's quite sad to hear. Mm-hmm. This time last week, I was on a beach, I was on holiday, and I got back to my room, and there's American TV, and I was watching stuff, and Ex Machina was just starting, starting. And I said to my wife, let's sit and watch this. I know we're in a beautiful holiday, but I haven't seen this for about 6 months. And we both sat there, and I turned around to him and said, that's probably the best sci-fi film I've seen in 5 years. Literally, in the last 5 years, of all the stuff, Prometheus is good and stuff like this, but that's the one for me that steals the show. This doesn't get anywhere near for me.
Mm-hmm.
The whole story of that film worked. In this, it was just, I can't quite put my finger on it. I mean, you delve in there a little bit, but it was missing something. I don't think the aliens look very good for me. That's
they
one thing.
Like
I,
feet.
They look like feet, yeah.
It looked like Thing from the Addams Family at a fetish party, all in leather.
I was also going to say it looked a bit like Monsters Dark Continent, those kind of figures, and that kind of, what's the film, Cloverfield? It reminded me of those long kind of legs and the stringy sort of like, I don't know, they didn't really, I expected when I saw them I'd be like, wow, so you didn't see them in the trailer.
Yeah.
So I was expecting to be quite blown away by this concept and how these aliens were going to look, and you know, there's a good team in place. I thought they would look really good. It just looked like tree stumps that were turning into spider webs, and it didn't do much for me. It was all right. So for me, I just feel completely, I just can't get my finger on it at the moment. Mm. I mean, Ben, you just touched upon it a bit, and I it's missing something.
I love sci-fi. It's arguably my favourite genre. But this wasn't sci-fi enough. I know that's going to sound crazy. It's a film about deciphering the language of alien beings that have just landed on Earth. But it fell into that kind of melodramatic trap that Interstellar did. It became too much about what we initially think, to echo Gemma's spoiler alert, what we initially think are flashbacks that she's having of her daughter who she raised and then died. It then turns out these are flash forwards. The aliens, learning the alien language then gives you the ability to see time across the whole length of time, forwards and backwards. So she's kind of seeing future echoes. So you're learning about the fact that she then will later on have this daughter with Jeremy Renner, and this daughter then dies. And it just felt exactly like Interstellar. It felt like those flashback scenes to Matthew McConaughey's daughter running through the barley fields or whatever it was. It felt exactly the same.
I was literally waiting for her to say, Marv!
even the playing, you know, the backwards with time, the time element being in was just very Interstellar for me. If I hadn't seen Interstellar, a film which I am on record many times as saying I disliked immensely, if I hadn't seen Interstellar, I might have enjoyed this more because it would have felt unique. But because it felt like of a piece with that, I'm tarring it with that brush, which isn't fair. It's not fair on Villeneuve or the actors or anyone else who made this, but it reminded me too much of that to fully invest and fully enjoy it.
But even the scenes where they were doing that, you remind you of Interstellar, it was the same sort of colour, the same filter, the same kind of acting. Everything felt like it. Even like the music in the background, I could imagine being literally off Interstellar. It felt exactly like it. Did. Not just remind you. It
yeah,
was,
tonally.
You ripped that off, dude.
Yeah.
You see, for me, and this is where I'm going to start maybe going a little bit away from you guys, I thought the music contributed beautifully to what we were seeing as well. The fact that it was otherworldly. We were interacting with these beings that came to Earth with a message. that whole feel I really enjoyed, and I am going to try and replicate what I felt the first time I watched it, because I did come out of the cinema just thinking, wow, what have I just seen? Everything else this year is filler. This is incredible. Mm. But I still have to think about the second time I've seen it.
I love that. This is all about the first.
No. Yeah.
I think just going back to the music for a second, it was the music was done by Johan Johansson, who was Oscar nominated twice, actually, for Theory of Everything and Sicario. So he's worked with Denis Villeneuve before. And I liked the score. I thought it worked. I think it was very beautiful. Mm. But it kind of fit with the whole... It fit very well with the visuals, as the score is supposed to do. And is it just me, or was this film very dark? Visually very dark?
Yes.
Everything took place in dark rooms or in shadows or in dark spaceships, even when they were outdoors. It was always overcast and grey. I don't think I saw the sun or direct sunlight at any point. And that kind of, the score echoed that very dark, mellow score.
Yeah, like an open, claustrophobic feeling. Mm. Even though you do see these great, vast, wide open spaces, the music kind of made it very, very small, a very small area to be around in.
What you're saying there about the dark, I'm not sure if they intentionally made everything so dark that when we saw the aliens on the other side and that bright light in front of them, it contrasts the humans to the alien elements.
I think you're probably right, yeah.
But I like that's the visual bit I really enjoyed. I love the bit when we actually saw the aliens, as in the cutoff point between them and the screen. And I think as a director, I can't fault him. He makes it look stunning.
Yeah.
And every shot from when they're first getting pushed away by the aliens... The way they move it was just flawless. Like it just makes me think the Blade Runner sequel is in very safe hands.
Oh, big time. I'm a huge Villeneuve fan for Sicario, Prisoners, all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Again, I don't want to keep comparing this to Interstellar because it's not fair on this film, but the direction was never the problem with Interstellar. It was a beautiful looking film because Nolan's a master, and I think Villeneuve directed the hell out of this. I just think the story, not even the script was fine, but it was just kind of the story... was the weakest element for me. It didn't really build to anything. It had such a great idea. These aliens have come down. They're trying to talk to us. How do we deal with them? We get in a linguist who learns their language. Where does that take us? Nowhere, really.
For about an hour.
Yeah. It takes us to a point where she realises, oh, okay, my daughter's going to die in the future, but I'm still going to have her anyway because, you know, why not fuck her?
I think I respect the way how they treated the story because it was a very... almost a very intelligent way of retelling a sci-fi story. We've not really seen this kind of sci-fi film before. Mm. It didn't rely on a great big battle being thrown across backdrops like Big Ben or like the pyramids or anything like that. I thought it was a very intelligent story. Maybe there does need to be explosions sometimes.
Yeah, you felt we lacked the battle in the end that you thought was coming. Because it felt it was coming.
Yeah, but I think, you know, having a very diplomatic ending, it wasn't the money shot.
Yeah, I don't think it needed a battle, but it needed something. It needed more oomph, because at the end of it, they kind of learn the language. They realise that this is going to help people interpret the future. The aliens go, see you later, and then they piss off, and that's the end of it. And then Jeremy Renner's scientist character turns to her and says, I've spent my whole life looking up the stars, but the most surprising thing wasn't meeting them, it was meeting you, Amy Adams.
Do you want to make a baby?
at that point, I pulled out my bath bag, and, you know, that was when I was like, oh, Interstellar again. Too melodramatic.
Love is stronger than any alien.
Better than science.
Well, the one thing I wanted to say before I forget, because I will forget this bit, so we got into the cinema, we sat down, and Up for me is the most tragic, saddest 2 minutes of film I've seen. This has now topped it. So we get in, there's not even a rival on the screen, not even any of the cast. We just see this young girl playing with the mom, Amy Adams, really nice, you know, growing involved. And we see her from being held as a baby to having pigtails and running through the grass in this beautifully shot shirt.
Yeah.
And then the next scene we see her, she's literally in the hospital, shaven head, obviously, because she's got cancer, dying. And then we see her kiss, and that's within the first 3 minutes. And the whole cinema, you could just see everyone, oh my God. Yeah. And I was like, that's a way to open a film. And then it said Arrival. And I was literally like, I feel like I just want to kill myself right now. It was the most bleak, saddest moment to start a film ever.
It was very bleak. They kind of ballsed it up, I think, with the reveal that those were flash forwards, not flashbacks. Midway through the film, there's a bit where you see one of these, what you think is a flashback. The daughter comes down and is saying to Amy Adams, oh, what's the word for such and such? Because she's a linguist and she can't come up with it. And the daughter says, oh, you know, it's a scientific term. And Amy Adams says, oh, well, if it's a scientist, you should ring your dad. And you're like, oh, Jeremy Renner's a scientist. Oh, I see now. This is clearly a flash forward. They get together, have a kid, blah, blah, blah. That ruined it for me because it gave it away. If they would have left it till the final reveal, if that only came out in the last 5-10 minutes,
it was annoying.
It would have been bigger and more important, but they telegraphed it.
Why don't you use your real name? Robin.
It was exactly that moment again. I was like, oh.
Yeah. And Jeremy Renner's character, I think the film did a piss poor job of explaining what his value was. So the two people that the army brought in to liaise with the aliens was Amy Adams's linguist character and Jeremy Renner's theoretical physicist. They go up onto the ship, Amy Adams does everything, and he just stands next to her. Then you cut to a bit where the two of them are sitting on a pickup truck, and Amy Adams says to Renner, oh, you know, I'm so glad that you're here. Without us two, they'd be nowhere. And I'm thinking, yeah, but what does he do? Because you're doing all the work. Yeah. He's literally just standing next to you, holding your coat. Yeah.
He's literally a shadow. He's just literally there.
But they're trying to make out like he's as important as she is. He didn't seem to do anything.
The only
thing you see him do about an hour later is work out that a certain fraction works out as 1/12. It's like, well, that's basic level maths, pal. You don't need a theoretical physicist for that.
Although he did make a very clever quip about Sheena Easton in the positioning of the spaceships. Someone in the cinema really like that gag.
One guy laughing his ass off at that mild gag.
I don't want to talk about people in the cinema today. There's a couple in front of us, literally with his daughter. They had a big family sized popcorn. It wasn't just it was 10 minutes of trying to open this popcorn. And then once they'd done it, I was like, oh, phew. Then the daughter pulled one out.
Yeah. What Mark's forgetting to say is this fellow who ate that jumbo popcorn, when we walked into the cinema, he was tucking into a box of chicken and chips.
Which they don't even sell at the
view. They don't sell. He brought that from somewhere down the road, was eating it in the cinema, and still had his popcorn.
People in the cinema, man. But
they're the worst.
They are.
God damn.
Scum. Subhuman scum.
We can talk about Amy Adams then. Yeah. So she's in this film for 80% of the film. Mm-hmm. Literally, we see every reaction on her face. Now, for me, I got a little bit annoyed with the heavy breathing. I know she was inside a helmet for most of it, so she would have had to, but it felt like she needed an inhaler. I really was getting to the point where I was like, can you just stop? I just want to hear you talk.
I'll just say, you okay, hun?
Like the kid off Hey Arnold. All the time. Did my head in. But she was fantastic. And if she does get nominated for an Oscar, it could be justified. I think she did pretty damn good.
I mean, I absolutely adore Amy Adams. Mm-hmm. And I do think the Oscars next year is her moment. And I think there is another film that is also out with her in Nocturnal Animals. If it's not for this film, Arrival, it will be for Nocturnal Animals. So she's guaranteed a bit of an award. But I loved her in this. And without getting too preachy or feminist or anything else like that, the fact that she was 80% of the film, it is so refreshing to see in a film of today as well. And I completely celebrate this. And I do think she was a tour de force in this film.
She was great. And I thought the same thing, actually, about half an hour into the film. It dawned on me that she was the focus and not Renner.
Yes.
And in any other given film, it would have been the male scientist that was the important one, and she was the one holding the coat. But they didn't. The woman was the focus, and I thought that was great. And she is brilliant. She is one of the best actresses working. I think she's been nominated for 5 Oscars now and never won, something like that. Same sort of Julianne Moore thing. My worry, I think, is because she's got 2 big performances coming out at around the same time, sometimes it means people don't get nominated because you have vote splitting.
That's
if people see you as in good in 2 things, they'll pick one over the other, and then you both get half the votes they should get and neither get nominated. Yeah. She deserves, I think, to be nominated or at least be considered for this film. I think she is brilliant. She's the key thing that she has to be able to portray is the wonder of the situation she's living in. She is the first person to experience first contact with an alien race. She is going up into their spaceship. She is experiencing the altered gravity that is in their ship. She is speaking to these feet creatures. And she manages to do it with a look of awe, or a certain amount of awe, but without ever seeing like a caricature. It would be very easy to fall into caricature if you've got a big, stupid, cheesy grin on your face or wide-eyed, you know, where am I? Oh, man, this is amazing. She does it subtly, but it's still there. You can still read the emotions. Mm-hmm. She's a fantastic actress.
I love her.
She is wonderful. She is. I want to dye my hair red, but then it'll probably end up orange and then I'll probably have like problems. So I can't really. Yeah.
Was anyone else put off or taken out of the film by Forrest Whitaker's unnecessary Boston accent?
Me too, yep.
Yes.
For some reason, he was saying things like, good morning, let's get started. why, you know, he's from like Los Angeles, I think. Yeah. Why was he doing a Boston accent? It was not necessary to the character at all. All I was thinking of was the film Ted.
That's whenever I hear a Boston accent, I just think of Ted now.
It was nice to see him. He hasn't been in stuff for a while, but yeah.
He's going to be in Rogue One, though. I only care about Rogue One.
Oh, man. Should we just talk about Rogue One? There's not much really to talk about this film, Arrival. I mean, I don't think there's lot. So you've talked about the score there, which I thought was really well done. At times, it was a bit too overpowering. The acting was fantastic. It was really nice to see such a good portrayal. And if he does get the Oscar nod, thumbs up.
I would say that I do think the ending was a little bit silly. It's the one thing I think that really took away what could have been a really emotional impact of the whole film. I think the message of world peace is probably quite apt right now. but I did think it was a little bit too saccharine. It was too sugary for me. I think, you know, the fact that maybe it did need a bit of conflict in order for us to learn about aliens would have been quite good. I would have, you know, I'm not saying war is a great thing. It really isn't. But I think it was probably the level of sweetness that the film delivered at the end was probably a little bit too much. And I think for me, it watered down my overall opinion of this film because it could have been really, it could have been there saying, yeah, definitely best film of the year. Hands down.
The message was too on the nose. The message was essentially, it takes an outsider to get us to work together for our own benefit. And it's like, it's a lovely idea in principle. You know, it's a bit hippy-dippy, but it was too on the nose. It was too heavy-handed, too melodramatic. And it's a shame because I thought the script, generally speaking, was pretty good up until the last 10 minutes of the film when it got a bit heavy-handed. Maybe, and here's one for you, Mark. The script writer is a chap called Eric Heiserer, who the most famous thing he's written before this was the 2011 prequel to The Thing.
Oh, that pile of shit.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that was his best known work prior to this. So I think he did generally a good job.
I think he's done well just to get any more work after that. Yeah. So fair play to the guy. He should be working in McDonald's or something.
But maybe at the end of the film, they might have had like 5 minutes until like home time. They're going, oh, let's make a baby in there. Call it a day. Done.
It was.
Yeah.
I haven't got much else to say. It's not one of these films we can really digest. We've got the main gist across. I'm happy to score
Let's score it.
Okay.
I'm going to go first and go seven. Mm-hmm. Okay. Seven's okay. Because you've come out and said it's your film of the year until today. So seven seems fair. It's not too high. It's not too low. Yeah. Six feels a bit cruel. I don't know why. Yeah. Six just seems a bit... That's turtle territory for us. You know.
Yes, I agree. I give it a seven as well for very similar reasons.
I'm actually going to give it an eight. You know, I'm still going to carry what I felt with me when I first saw this, and it was a great film when you first see it, but the second time didn't have the same impact. But I'm going to stick with my guns. It's going to be an eight for me. But it makes no sense because it's still a 7 out of 10 if we round it all up. So Arrival, 7 out of 10.
It's time for another prize giveaway. We are very generous here at Skip to the End, and if you'd listened to our last episode, we gave away two prizes, and we did it again. The first competition we ran was to win an amazing The Thing t-shirt from our good friends at Headshot Clothing. Now, you've probably seen on our Instagram this week, and our Facebook, and our Twitter, and everything we could, this iconic image of MacReady, but if you look closely, there's all of the other elements of the film. It's stunning.
It's brilliant.
Paul
Again, we love it.
He's nailed it.
Absolutely gorgeous.
And you know how much I love The Thing. I'm going to big it up anyway. But
no, really.
It really is. It really is a mighty, mighty fine design. So great work. We're going to give that away to Damien Bullock, who guessed right that John Carpenter directed The Thing. If anyone had actually sent the wrong thing, I would have personally attacked them online. But also, we introduced this nice little thing. If you left us a review on iTunes, I like to reward those people because some of the reviews you've seen and we've been tweeting them this week, people spend a lot of time, not just good podcasts, they write an essay. Yeah. And I love reading these back, and we really do get off on it. Now, we offered the chance for a DVD set of the Iconic Moments range, which is 12 films. There's all the classics in there, like Argo, which I mentioned twice, Full Metal Jacket, The Dark Knight, all these ones, but they've got stunning artwork in these slipcases that are really exclusives. And we're going to give that to RUK76, who left us a 5-star iTunes rating. So thank you for that. I've got us another two competitions this week. I didn't want to drop the ball down to one again. So to celebrate, when we saw the trailer earlier for Fantastic Beasts, the brand new film from Warner Brothers, I didn't even know it was related to Harry Potter. I asked these two on the way out. So that's how
what universe
out of
do you live in?
I just don't like Harry Potter films.
But it's even got the music. The
I got that as well. That was really cool.
Not interested. But anyway, we've got an official wand, a journal, a keep safe box, a T-shirt, a USB card, a bendable bow truckle, whatever that is.
Oh, what now?
Bow truckle.
Bendable bow truckle.
What's a bendable? Yeah.
Bendable.
Oh, bendable.
Yeah,
right.
Bendable.
Not a bendable.
No. Exclusive label pins that you can't buy, scarves, flag, a tote bag, the works. They've given us a lot. Now, the question I'm not going to be too easy and too, like, I'm not going to give the answer away on the episode. It's going to be, what is the American School of Magic called in the movie? Bit more tough because this is a I know that people love Harry Potter and they go crazy for this stuff, and this is merch that you can't buy, so I want to make it a little bit tougher. But also, if you'd looked on our Twitter this week, Gemma had posted a picture of a new t-shirt she bought from Dark Bunny Tees.
I certainly did,
and they are now in with us, you know. Made the phone call, rung them up, nice guys. But they do, and I'm not just saying this to plug them, they do some of the best Christmas jumpers I've ever seen. Die hard ones with Yippee-yay, you motherfucker.
Yeah,
they've got the guns on the back, they've got Home Alone. They've got literally, have you seen them? They've got the Stay Puff one for Ghostbusters.
Yes, they do indeed, they've got everything. And
so I said to them on the phone, I said, look, we want to sort our listeners out. And they said, what are you laughing, Ben?
This is the way you said, incorrectly said, yippee-ki-yay. Yippee-yay.
That's what they've printed there, the reject ones. We've got the rejects to give away. So, they've given us a die-hard Christmas jumper to give away. And these are awesome. So, what good timing, you know. Yeah. But they've not just given us one, they give us a couple. So, keep looking on our Twitter feed this week as well, because we'll run one on there as well. Let's make it a little bit easier for here. Let's say, what's the character that Bruce Willis plays in Die Hard? That seems fair enough.
I think so.
Now, I said to them, because Gemma had obviously made a purchase, and I bought a Rogue One jumper, which I'm actually wearing now, I would like to give something to our fans. So they've said, if you want anything off their site, put in a discount code, skip to the end, and you'll get 20% off everything on their site until Christmas. And I like this, because Gemma told me earlier she bought her boyfriend a present, and I could have given the code.
Don't do some of that. Wait, my boyfriend listens to the podcast.
Oh yeah, whoops. That's really good of him.
It is, and I'm going to get one of those diehard jumpers.
Yes, definitely. So thanks to our good friends now, yeah. I like saying definitely. That at Dark Bunny Tees, and catch us in 2 weeks when I announce the winner of both competitions.
It's now time for Movie Masturbate, one of our favourite features, I'm finding. A lot of people are giving a lot of love for this.
Screw Skip Back. Who cares about that now? People, oh God, don't end it. Who cares?
Yeah. Dead
to us.
What
it's all about.
Come on, masturbate.
Big time.
Yes. So, on the last episode, it was my turn to pick the Pocket of Fame.
You called it something better than that, like the Clunge of Destiny or something.
Don't think it was that. I called it the Dish of Destiny.
Oh, that's it, yeah.
Clunge was not in the equation at any point.
Who even, like, encouraged you to say Clunge?
I don't know.
He just wanted to say it on air.
I know, yeah. Let's go the Sphere of Glitz.
Okay, I like that.
That sounds nice.
We'll have that.
And I chose Will Ferrell.
Yeah.
Which is a great choice. Woo. Me and Ben were really happy about it.
Big time.
I wasn't.
Well, majority wins. So, yeah, so we decided to go out and find our favourite performance of Will Ferrell. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to have a lot of fun with this because I did actually watch the film that I chose and bloody loved it. So I'm going to pick the fellow Will Ferrell fan next to me, Ben, and I want you to start this one off. Mm-hmm.
Fully paid up member of the Will Ferrell fan club, as I say all the time. Now, I would assume you're going to be expecting me to say Ron Burgundy in Anchorman or one of the Step Brothers in Step Brothers. But no, I'm going to throw you a curveball. My favourite performance from Will Ferrell is actually a jumped up cameo. Oh. It's him playing the character of Chaz Reinhold in Wedding Crashers.
Yes! Mom! Meatloaf!
Mom! The meatloaf! Fuck!
He
He's only in two scenes. You see, when Owen Wilson is starting to lose his mojo for Wedding Crashing, he goes to visit the inventor of the Wedding Crasher rules, which is Chad Reinhardt, and he lives in his mum's basement, despite the fact that he's in his 40s, and he's sat there in his dressing gown telling him about how he's now started stopped crashing weddings and he started crashing funerals because it's easier. And then you then see him in a second scene at a funeral, like behind a woman who's grieving. He's doing sort of a humping motion behind her, and he's on screen for maybe 3 minutes total, but it's just riotously yeah. funny. It's kind of everything Will Ferrell is distilled into 3 minutes.
Yeah,
and I just love it. It's fantastic.
You shocked me with that. I didn't think you'd go with that one. Yeah. Good work.
But it's such a good cameo.
Yeah.
The fact he is only on screen for so little time, and he's won your favourite performance. It probably is. You said on the last episode, the funniest man alive.
Yeah.
Wow.
It is arguably the funniest bit of footage of the funniest man alive, in my opinion.
Yeah. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
That's a great shout. It's true, because you can almost say that's his career in 3 minutes.
Yeah,
the why people love him so much.
Yeah, exactly. Distills him.
I thought when you said it's a small cameo in the comedy, I thought you were going to say Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back.
Which of course I've seen many times. Never seen that shite.
Even though he's in it, would you not give it a chance now?
Absolutely not.
Future rewatch. I'll get him one day.
Go on, Mark, your choice.
Frank the Tank.
Yeah.
Me too!
We're going for old school.
Yeah.
Yes, film. Same here.
The reason I chose this is old school is my favourite film with him in. It's mm-hmm. not just picking it because, you know, we have to make sure we let the listeners know it's our personal favourite performance. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean the film they're in can always be any good.
Mm-hmm.
If they give a good performance, but the film's shit, it's justifiable. In this, for me, it's his funniest film he's ever been in. It's the best performance I've seen him in, and I've never laughed so much in my life at this performance of Frank.
Yeah. Amen to that.
We're streaking.
Hey, Snoop, Snoopaloop.
It's just what a funny film. Like, it's the whole great. Film from start to finish is great, and it's hard to say, but I don't know what makes it so funny. I don't actually know. There's so many that came out around that time. But this one stands out for me. It's just everyone involved in it is funny.
Yeah,
it is brilliant. It's Vince Vaughn's best performance as well. Mm-hmm. The other Wilson. Luke Wilson's best performance. I think the reason why Ferrell is so good in this is because he's usually starts off as the wild man or the man child, but in this he doesn't. He starts off as the good adult family man who then just degenerates back to himself as Frank the Tank. I remember one of the scenes, he's in, they're having a frat party and he's in the room with some teenage lads and they're trying getting him to do a beer bong.
That's
and he's not up for it at first. He's like, oh, I've got a pretty busy weekend plan. We're going to go to Bed Bath & Beyond. Yeah, I don't know if there'll be time. But then he's on the beer bong. Oh, God.
It's, for me, it ranges Will Ferrell's comedic skills altogether. Mm-hmm. Like you said, he's not the like screaming and kicking kind of man child. It shows how multifaceted he is as well. And I think one of my favourite moments of not just this film, but his career, one of the most serious scenes when an old man called Blue passes away during a mud wrestle, jelly wrestling.
Yeah.
And that rendition of Dust in the Wind as well.
It's incredible.
Oh, you're my boy, Blue!
Amazing.
You're my boy!
My favourite line in the entire film, there's a bit where Will Ferrell's character Frank is out on the stoop of their frat house and he's holding onto a blow-up doll. And someone comes past the house and says to him, oh, that's a nice doll, Frank. And he goes, yeah, she's okay. Kills me every time.
It is one of the most quotable films as well. Isn't like, my boy Blue, it's so good.
There's also really, it's only a small bit, but towards the end when they're doing the academia games, and they're sort of walking down the steps in slow motion, all in suits and, you know, sort of the insignias. And you just see Frank sneeze in slow motion. And it's the best bit as well, because it's just so petite, but so, so good.
I think, was it directed by Todd Phillips?
It was directed by Todd Phillips,
and
yes.
And he's kind of ever so slowly disappearing up his own arsehole.
Shame.
He needs to go back to doing funny, silly comedies.
What is he doing now? I don't really follow his
War
work.
Dogs was the last one of his. He tries to do these comedies now that are sort of semi-comic, semi-dramatic, have a bit of a message.
Yeah.
Which he started with, weirdly enough, he started it with the third Hangover film. The first Hangover film was an out-and-out comedy. The second one was an out-and-out comedy because it was a rip-off of the first one. The third one, he tried to do a whole thing about how Zach Galifianakis' character was depressed and, you know, it's about him and a bit mentally unhinged and all this kind of stuff. Tried to put a bit of dramatic weight into it. And I think he's going that way now.
Yeah.
He needs to just go back to making these really good, solid comedies, I think.
Yeah, like the last season of MASH. No thanks.
Well, yeah, I'm glad we agreed on that one. I'm surprised by yours, which is why I like this section so much.
It's good.
So I'm ready to pick again for...
Sphere of Glitz.
What are you on about?
Come on, it's got to be a different name every time.
I'm going to call it the Bonanza Bowl.
Oh!
So, my fingers are in. I'm pulling one out. On the next episode, we will be mass debating over... Joaquin Phoenix.
No! Yes! Whacking to Joaquin.
Our rewatch this week is the 1996 psychosexual thriller Crash, directed by David Cronenberg. It stars James Spader as a sexually adventurous man who's in an open relationship with his wife, and they're always looking for new sexual highs. And he gets into a car crash, and because of this, he ends up falling in with a cult of people who are aroused by car crashes, led by Elias Koteas and also Holly Hunter. He then falls into a relationship with the both of them, and it's about exploring the sexual depths that they go to get off.
These are sex people, Lynn.
They're sex people. I don't want to come to your sex festival. There are three sex scenes within the first 6 minutes, which it kind of tells you what you're letting yourself in for, doesn't it?
I had to get a second box of tissue at that point. And it's a family pack. You know, the ones you get in the handbag, like a proper box.
Don't
bring your family
too
in.
The worst part is when I look down, there's like puppies on the actual toilet roll. That put me off. But anyway, carry on.
Good Lord. Right, to counterbalance that grossness from Mark, I'm going to throw it to you, Gemma. What are your instant thoughts about Crash?
I was expecting Louis Theroux to pop in at any moment with a wry comment and an awkward glance to the camera. It's different, isn't it?
It is a bit.
I mean, if I ever come across a car crash, the first thing I think is, well, I hope they're all right. Not, ooh, I hope they're all right. Where do we start with this?
I know.
There's a lot of sex in it.
Yeah.
Script's a bit terrible. But I see.
Oh, hideous.
But because it's a J.G. Ballard book, mm-hmm. and obviously he's responsible for High Rise.
Great film, great book.
I can see why he wrote it, but I'm struggling to see why David Cronenberg made it. I can see the merits in it because it is such a different story to tell, you know, especially when sex is the forefront mm-hmm. of it. You want to make sure that if you're going to do a film where sex is the main ingredient, you have to do it in a way that doesn't seem so boring.
Yeah.
And this is such an exploration of getting your kicks off and finding people with the same interests. So I know it was a very controversial film. And I know it is a bit weird when you watch it the first time. I can see the merits in it.
Mark, boner or groaner?
Well, you've heard I had to get through two boxes of tissues within 6 minutes. It's a daring film, a very, very daring film. It's a very curious film.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it did well to go and break those boundaries.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
It is flawed, but I found it flaccid. But I found it
flaccid. You were flaccid.
Fascinating.
I did, and it's a weird one. It's
I'm with Mark. Yeah,
there's definitely something. It has an appeal to watch, and mm-hmm. it's so different to anything else I've seen.
Yeah.
It's not like we can compare this to like we're talking then about Arrival and Interstellar. Mm. Tell me another film that's like this.
Not
there isn't one.
No,
Planet Terror might not Planet Terror. What's the other one they're driving?
Death Proof.
Death Proof is the closest you'll get with someone speeding the car and a bit of raunchy sex. That's about it. It is so unique and so different, but David Cronenberg films are.
Mm-hmm.
And J.G. Ballard books are.
Yeah. So you're going to put them two together.
And that's why I don't want to sort of come across and say, oh, it's terrible, because it's not. It's fascinating.
Mm.
And I think everybody does need to watch this at least once.
Yeah. It's an artifact. It's something to be examined rather than enjoyed, I think.
Yes.
It's a...
have you guys read the reviews for this?
Oh, yeah.
It's the most... random thing I've ever seen for this, because you get 10 out of 10, amazing, well done, pushes the boundaries, raunchiness done well, this is not porn, this is sex on screen, but done well.
I think Mark Commode said it was perfect.
Yeah.
It isn't.
No. But you also get disgusting, horrible, why would you make this into a film? Watching people get hurt, then fuck, this is not what my cup of tea, from Ethel 88 in Wiltshire. Yeah. But, you know, I can't, this is a weird one, because I'm not going to slag it off, but I won't watch it again.
No.
I didn't enjoy it, but it wasn't offensive, and I've seen worse.
Yeah.
And I nearly said I've come across worse. But I meant watching, you know, I've come across worse than this.
Yeah.
And I will, I'm sure, see stuff that is a lot more shocking. But you've got to remember, this film's 20 years ago.
Yeah.
We've seen stuff like Serbian film and stuff like this now, where people talk about how extreme they are.
Yeah.
This is now. This is 20 years ago. This is the factor of, in the mid-90s, nothing like this came out. And then when this did, it shocked. Like when you watched The Exorcist in the 70s, those people back then were absolutely horrified. Now you see Insidious every week, those sort of films. This was different, and you got to put it back then.
Yeah, it seems rather quaint now, because we've seen worse, I think. But as you say, 20 years ago, it was shocking. Like Gemma said, there was a lot of sex, but it was really dull. It's the least sexy sex I've ever seen. There's nothing titillating about it. It's really off putting, to be honest. You know, it did nothing for me. Answer me a question, please, the two of you, because maybe I've just been missing something in my sex life. But why did the women keep whipping out one tit? All of them, whenever they wanted to sort of get the man going, would flop out one tit. Is that a method I wasn't familiar with?
Is that like a deaf thing? You know, if you can't like hear, you just, it's like the deaf symbol for sex? Nipple? I've
absolutely no idea, but it seemed to work.
I've not come across that.
Get them both out.
That's a really good point, Ben. I don't know. But, you know, if you're listening to this podcast, don't start adapting that into your sex life.
Well, maybe do. You know, apparently works.
But tit?
Yeah. Just tit?
And the grossest, most extreme scene is... is when old Robert California himself, James Spader, ends up shagging the wound on the back of Rosanna Arquette's leg. So she has this vulva-shaped wound, which he shags. And it's... fucking mental.
I'm going to say it here. I think that's where Tommy Wiseau got his inspiration from.
Good well be. The whole film felt like The Room, actually. There was a lot of pointless sex scenes and a lot of wooden acting. Yeah. It was like a prequel to The Room. But the one thing I will say about that scene of him shagging the wound is that it was the one entirely Cronenbergian moment in the film. Because Cronenberg, in his early years, dealt a lot in body horror. A lot of his films circulated around that.
Yep.
And I think that was... I would throw that in with the whole body horror thing. You know, she has this vagina wound on the back of her leg and he's getting stuck in.
Exactly,
Getting his leg in.
Sorry.
Like, you've heard, like, oh, look at her axe wounds. You know, this is on a whole new level. Christ. I mean, I was quite surprised when you pulled this out as a rewatch choice.
Sorry, I'll put it back in.
Yeah, I really was, to the point where you get extreme films and you get, you know, like you said, we haven't done any controversial films. And I thought, okay, he's going to pick something like Exorcist or Serbian film. And when you pick this, I forgot it existed.
Me too.
And I kind of want to forget it exists now because I will not watch it again. I said it and I won't. It's not offensive, but it is vulgar.
I would argue it's both. It's not offensive in that there's a lot of sex and violence. It's offensive in that it's shit.
Yeah.
It offends my sensibilities as a film fan.
And it's not often in a film as well that we see the full minge anymore. When she's lying across the chairs and we zoom in. I remember when we watched, when Basic Instinct was known for the famous opening of the legs, and it's like a literally 1 second of, you have to really quickly pause it to see. But, you know, it's
speaking from experience,
it's really quick. It's like you miss it and it's gone. It wasn't like a... It was like, I looked away because I was like, that's horrible. Because it wasn't like done in a sexy way. And when I looked back, it was still on screen. So I looked away again. I was like, this is weird. Like,
waving at you.
I'm not horny at this. This is horrible. Looked back and it was still on screen winking at me. And I was like, just get that growler off the screen. I don't want to see it.
I'm suddenly aware that all three of our mums listen to this podcast.
Oh, I'm so sorry, Mum.
Yeah, and that's why I wanted it to not be on the screen, because I thought, you know, this is degrading to women, which I hate.
Here's a bit of trivia for you. Adult Video News, AVN, which is kind of like the porn industry Oscars. They do an AVN Awards. In 1998, it won Best Alternative Adult Feature Film. So Porn Awards, not even proper movie awards, Porn Awards gave this a statue.
What?
Yeah.
I'm sorry,
I wonder what the other contenders were at the time.
But I mean, that whole scene about when she's the wife shagging Robert California. I'm trying to remember it. Oh, James, that was it. Robert California, we all know. When they're sort of getting it on or knocking boots, and she starts going on about, oh, have you tasted Vaughn's semen? Oh, it's a bit salty for my liking. Well, she didn't say that gruff, but insinuated that.
No, she did say some salty, some isn't.
Some like is salty, some is not.
A northern factory worker. I don't think she was.
I would have loved it if she was a northern factory worker. But yeah, that and he was sort of like...
That scene was bizarre because she kept saying, tell me about this, have you done this, tell me about it. And he didn't say a word. He was just like, shush, love. Like, I'm just doing my business.
And can I add as well, like, because we haven't talked about Vaughn. Now, Vaughn is one of the key players in this storytelling universe. And how is Vaughn this sexual being that everybody wants to fuck?
I don't know, because he ends up shagging James's wife and James and Rosanna Arquette's character and
Holly Hunter. Oh, he gets a bit of a... Does he get a feel of Holly Hunter?
I think he does.
Only have one tit.
No offence to Elias Koteas, but he's not the most handsome man. And in this film, he's also been through several car crashes, he's covered in scars. He looks like a corpse.
He looks like a toe.
He does look like a toe. A dead toe. Because I've never seen a man that white.
Yeah.
He was damn near translucent. But apparently he is this sexual figure.
Yeah.
I'm not going to eat any iron for a long time and get like anemic and really white and pale and walk around. All these girls be like, want a bit of my tits? Yeah. You know what I mean?
And guys as well. So watch out, sexual being.
Yeah, it's absolutely insane. But
I couldn't understand it.
If I'm late for the next recording, it's because there's too many one tits out there that want a piece.
One tit does plenty.
Do you know what's weird? The main character in this film, played by James Spader, the character's name is James Ballard, which is J.G. Ballard's real name. And that is the name of the character in the book as well. I don't know how much of this was autobiographical. I'm hoping none. I'm hoping Ballard just gave the character his own name just for the crack.
For the crack.
Just for a laugh,
allegedly.
I should say. I really hope none of this happened to him.
Even if one bit of it happened, that scars me and I don't ever want to chat to him.
I reckon one time a girl got her left tit out and from that sprung the whole book.
In a mini metro.
Oh my God.
Yeah, so plus points. Have we got any? I loved the 90s-esque kind of porno theme music score kind of thing as well, because that was going on like every other second, wasn't it?
The score was, I think it was by Howard Shaw, who has won Oscars for like the Lord of the Rings soundtrack.
You've got to be
kidding me. I'm sure it was the same dude.
Could have done it on a Casio. Yeah.
Some of the acting was terrible. Like Deborah Carr-Unger, who played James Spader's wife, was the shittest. Do you know what she reminded me of? Do you ever remember those... Do you remember when Channel 5 first launched? And on a Friday night, they would have those crappy softcore things starring Shannon Tweed. She reminded me of one of those... And that's what this whole film feels like, really. A slightly more ratcheted up Channel 5 softcore porn.
She's got a sex face, hasn't she? She's got a proper full-on sex face.
I think I've seen her on Men and Motors at midnight when you get that 15-minute preview or Television X where you get only... 7 minutes, but yeah.
And the bit at the end as well, because spoiler alert for those that aren't going to watch this, they ultimately get involved in a massive car crash. And Mrs. is on the grassy bank and she's sort of like, oh, she looks pretty injured. And then he comes around and stops, you know, pops it inside her.
Chucks it up her.
And I can't help but think, like, surely you've got to be calling 911 right now because she's clearly hurt.
Mm.
And then she's like, oh, ow. Ooh,
priorities. Wrapped up the drain pipe, then call the ambulance.
Yeah, he thought that she was moaning with pleasure, but it was because her spine was shattered.
She's got internal bleeding. Stop it.
The only thing that's getting internal right now is this. Yeah, vile. Thanks, Ben.
Oh, let's bring this to a close for the love of Christ.
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's score it.
Who wants to go first?
Gemma, you can go first.
5 out of 10.
That's generous. Why?
Because,
explain yourself.
All right, I'm going to explain myself. So it is, we've never seen anything like this. We've never certainly reviewed anything like this.
Shouldn't have to.
I can kind of see why it was made, because obviously there's a reason why nothing like this has been done. It's a bit of harmless fun, but it is also... shit. So I'm going to go straight downward and say 5.
Mark?
3.
Mm-hmm.
It's shit.
I won't watch it again. I didn't really enjoy it. There was bits about it that made me twitch, but no, it's a three. I'm not giving it a five. All right, if I'm saying it's average, like bang in the middle.
Yeah.
This is not an average film, babe. Trust me.
Babe!
Yeah, babe.
I thought it was a piece of shit, and just so that the maths are easy, I'm going to give it a four, so that it gets an overall 4 out of 10. And whose turn is it to pick the next one? For the love of God, pick something good.
It's mine. Usually we give a big long spiel about why we've picked something, and there's, you know, we lead us down a path and they either surprise us with something shit or something. Ben, I'm going to pick something good. So that's what I'm telling you straight away.
Yeah.
I've realised that on the next episode, we're getting close to Christmas. Our main review is Bad Santa 2.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we should have a bit of a drink on our next recording. We've done it for the last couple of years and keep that tradition going. I think the episode after will be Star Wars, and I don't think I want to drink on that episode. I don't think they mix. I want to just be fun and jokes.
We'll be drunk on
comedy.
The Force.
Yes. So on the next episode, I want a comedy. I want some bit of fun. I was going to go for something serious and iconic, but I thought, let's just make it a really fun episode. So on the next episode, I want us to get some White Russians and watch The Big Lebowski. Yes!
Excellent choice. Tremendous news. Time for Top of the Props.
So the name's good now, isn't it?
It's good, yeah. It is good. It's our newly minted game show, and here's how it works. I am going to name 5 props from a film, and there will be 5 films. For each prop that I name, you will get a certain amount of points, because the props will get progressively easier. So if you get it from prop number 1, you get 5 points. If you get it from prop number 2, 4 points, then 3, then 2, then 1. Make sense to everyone so far?
Yep.
Now, to make it a bit harder, a bit more fun, or to add a bit of a gambling element to it, you don't get your own questions. I put out one question or one set of props, and it's the first person to shout out with the right answer who gets the points.
I'm so nervous.
And last week, last time round, it was Mark and I who played. I won, of course. But it was tense, wasn't it, Mark? I could feel my little bumhole going.
It was a wigwam and a teepee. 2 tents.
Terrible. He's used that one before. It's never going to be funny.
That was scripted.
Reading off right here.
So, ladies and gentlemen, are we ready to get going?
Let's do this.
Okay, so here's your first film, and here's your first clue, your first prop. A needle. Anyone want to have a punt based on a needle?
I'm too much of a pussy to do it. I'm going to wait for the next one.
Number 2. A wallet. Any ideas?
No, I want to play it safe.
Nah, yeah, me too.
Number 3, a gold watch.
Sounds like my Christmas list.
Oh, Mark, I can see the little cogs going in Mark's mind. He's thinking of having a go.
No, that's what I meant for dinner. What am I going to make when I get home?
I want to play it safe.
Number 4, a briefcase.
I'm going to guess Inception.
Incorrect, and you are locked out.
Oh! Okay, then I'm going to be safe and I'm going to get the next one in.
Clue number 5, a gimp suit.
Pulp Fiction. Yay!
And Gemma gets 1 point. I thought one of you would get it from the gold watch.
Oh,
and he
dipped
the watch up his ass.
Oh. You can see why I said Inception, though. Briefcase. Yeah. Only 1 point. I'm comfortable.
That's fine. Okay. You can bring it around.
Easy.
I'm just warming up.
Okay. Film number 2, prompt number 1. A napkin.
I love how you're saying it. A napkin.
No.
Prompt number 2, a piano.
I'm going to guess.
Yeah.
Is it Lost in Translation?
It is not.
Fuck.
And you are locked out.
Oh, language, please. We're a family show.
Mark, are you ready for prompt number 3?
I am.
A leopard print vest.
Next one.
A cucumber wrapped in foil.
Oh, I know.
Too late for you, kid.
What?
For the easy 1 point, prompt number 5, an amp that goes up to 11.
Oh.
Oh, what can that be?
It's his final tap.
It is final tap. 1 point for Mark.
All right, let's do this.
Film number 3, a taser.
That could be anything.
That's kind of the point. That's why it's the hardest one.
Next one, please.
Prompt number two, a throne.
I really want to say one, but I'm too scared.
Do you know what Ben sounds like when he's reading it? Like when you get these cassettes, that you, well, not cassettes, but CDs or something, and you're like learning a new language.
Kiss,
a crown.
Next one.
Yeah.
An eye patch.
Oh. No.
I'm going to risk it and I think I'll lose it, but Escape from New York.
Oh, you're wrong.
Oh, it's the eye patch.
You're locked out.
Okay, let's go to the next one.
A rainbow bridge.
Oh my God, is it fucking hell? Is that, sorry language. Is it Thor?
It is, yeah. Thor!
Oh my God, I genuinely thought I was going to get it wrong then, and then I was going to get like mercifully ripped apart.
You get the 2 points, and the final clue for that one was a magical hammer.
Ooh.
Ready for the next one?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, this is so... Go for it, Ben.
Okay. Mm. Prompt number one, a guitar.
I'm going to guess.
Mark, God, don't be an idiot.
Don't be a hero.
Okay. I'm not going to let you.
Okay.
Prop number two, a bulletproof vest.
Go for 3 points.
Yeah.
Plutonium.
I know this. Come on, think, John, think.
You can go for it. Go on, risk
it. No, I
never. Risk it for a biscuit.
My brain's not cooperating.
Are we going for two?
Let's do two.
A clock tower.
I have no idea.
You will kick yourself.
I feel like such a fraud because I don't know.
Final clue.
Yeah.
A DeLorean.
Oh, Back to the Future.
Gemma gets the points. 1 point.
Out we are sitting again. A clock tower.
Plutonium.
Oh my God.
You dibs.
Can we edit this? Because I sound like an absolute moron not knowing one of my favourite films of all time.
Right, we're going to go into the fifth and final one just to let you know where we stand with the points.
Okay.
Mark, you're on 1 point. Gemma's got 4.
Okay.
So,
risk it for a biscuit.
You need to risk it for
a
biscuit.
Let's do this.
Film number 5. Number 1. A handgun.
Mark?
Oh my God, do I risk it?
You don't need to risk it this
time.
Because don't forget, if you get it to a tie, yeah, there is a tiebreaker.
All right, let's go for
so
the
you
next
can hold
one.
On a little bit.
Okay.
Number 2. An orange. If you guess now, Mark, you could win. But if you wait till the next one, you could tie.
Don't look at me like that.
We can tie. We can make this super tense.
Let's go for the next one.
A red rose.
Oh,
I have no idea.
I've exposed myself as a liar. Oh,
God, I've really got to pick though, haven't I?
If you don't have a guess now, Mark, you can't win.
I don't want to lose again.
Again,
so
this is super sad.
So my childhood again.
I can see it in my head.
No, you can't. You're trying to.
Yes, I can.
What can you see then?
I can see someone with an orange in their mouth.
She's right. Time up, Mark.
Because I'm going to lose, I'm just going to go for a wild guess of train spotting.
Incorrect. You are locked out and you have lost the game.
Oh, that's really hard.
Let's see if Gemma can get okay. This. Clue number 4 is a garrote wire.
Oh, fuck. Oh, dear.
Look how drained Gemma looks right now from this quiz.
This is the toughest one. I purposely left the toughest one till last.
I'm being hurt by my own creation. No, I can't.
That's what my mum used to say to me every day.
Next one.
The final one.
Failure.
A horse's head.
Oh, Godfather. Oh,
horse is the Godfather.
My God.
That's really hard. Oh, my God.
So at the end of the quiz, Gemma has 5 points and Mark has 1. So that's back-to-back defeats for Mark. So it means he definitely gets the wooden spoon. Gemma, you and I are playing for all the marbles next time round when Mark will be the quiz master.
This does not feel like a victory.
Before we move on, though, would you like to have a go at the tiebreaker? Just to see if Mark can get a bit of glory back.
I just want to say now...
This is the real quiz.
No, yeah. He's throwing a shoe over the pub. What have you done? I lost on purpose today because...
Bullshit.
Because I didn't want a boring tie, so I wanted to make it tense for the listeners next week for you two, the true winners.
Really?
This is the real quiz.
This is the quiz, though.
Come on, then.
Right. Prop number 1, a medal.
Nope.
Mm-mm.
Prop number 2, a hammer.
I'm going to have a guess.
God.
Old boy.
Incorrect. You are locked out of the unnecessary tiebreaker. Gemma.
Yes.
Number three, a candy cane.
Oh, God. A metal hammer, a candy cane. No, God.
Number four, a go-kart.
Oh, my God, I don't know. No, I don't know.
Do you know it, Mark?
No.
God.
Final one, an arcade machine.
Is it big?
Wreck-It Ralph.
It is Wreck-It Ralph. It's Wreck-It Ralph.
Wow.
Gemma pissed all over you from a great height there, Mark.
Dreadful. You've been Back to done. The Future one has really hurt badly.
You look defeated.
Stick around in 2 weeks' time to hear me as Games Master when I guarantee I won't lose. We're almost at the end, so let's finish with some nice old listener questions.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, Helen Elliott has said, can you all now on air agree to never ever take a 3 week break again because it's far too long and I've missed you guys?
Of course.
I'm not going to agree
to that. We can't agree to that, but we appreciate it that we were missed.
And we will do our best to never go on holiday again and enjoy ourselves.
unless Canada calls.
Craig Jarrett has said that he's recently listened to our episode where we were talking about actors that are quite similar in each role. He's recently watched Jason Bateman in a lot of stuff and says that in everything he does, he is the same. Does that qualify him as a good actor?
Hmm.
It's tricky to say. I think, you know, everything Jason Bateman has done in the last few years has been a direct result of Arrested Development. He was out in the wilderness since that. You know, prior to that, he'd been in like a family sitcom in the 80s, and I think he was the star of Teen Wolf 2, and then his career pretty much disappeared. He then got this job on Arrested Development playing Michael Bluth, and he was brilliant in it. And pretty much everything he's done since, he's just a variation on Michael Bluth. But he gets cast because he was so successful doing that, that people are like, well, if we need a guy who's in that mold, let's get him. I think he is a good actor. But if you want an example of him going outside of the box or not being the same character we're used to, watch a film called Bad Words.
Brilliant film.
You've seen it. It's great, isn't it?
It's fantastic.
Stars him and was directed by him. It was his directorial debut, I think, in which he plays a guy who decides to start entering spelling bees. So it's with all these kids, like 12-year-olds, you know, spell disturbing. And you know, he's doing these with them because he found a loophole. The rule is that you can only attend if you've not graduated a certain grade by a certain date. And because he never graduated, it means he can get in. And he plays a really dark, foul-mouthed character who treats these kids like shit. And it's very different to what we've seen him do before. And he nails it.
Mm-hmm. I think there is a reason why he does get these roles. Mm. And he's just funny. There's this dryness about him that actually works. And I think a lot of other actors have tried to replicate a kind of dryness to their comedy, and it doesn't often work. Jason Bateman, the reason he is successful is because it does work. He has a formula, and I think hence why he does get cast in these particular type of roles.
Yeah.
I'm not bored of him. So
I love him.
There's other actors out there that are too, you know, Stifler. I got sick of it after three or four films. This guy, carry on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No problem with me. At Rosie33, The Crown on the Netflix supposedly cost £100 million.
Yeah.
What do you guys think that the future holds for Netflix when they can now pull out these series that cost that much to make?
Before we get into that, I just want to say that I watched The Crown. I watched all 10 episodes last weekend. Wasn't expecting to like it. Period dramas aren't my cup of tea. I don't really give a shit about the monarchy, but the reviews I read were really good. So I watched it. It is excellent.
Mm-hmm. I'm on episode 4. Love it.
Stick with it. How great is Jared Harris as the king?
So good.
He's a national treasure, Jared Harris. Yeah. Today we saw the trailer for that Allied with Brad Pitt and Marion Cotillard, which I wasn't really caring about. The reviews and so on didn't bother me. The trailer today was really good. It looked interesting, especially because Jared Harris is in it, which I didn't know. So now I do want to see that. So watch The Crown if you haven't. It's definitely worth a watch. But what comes next for Netflix? Just more of the same, I think. They have so much money. They don't have to rely on advertising or that can go up and down. They have a huge subscriber base that I don't think is likely to drop, as long as they keep then putting that money into newer and bigger and better things.
I'm excited for the future for Netflix. I really am. I mean, you think about, they've done Daredevil, Jessica Jones. They even reinstated Arrested Development.
Yeah.
There is so much exciting things coming. It's not just the original movies that we saw with Beasts with No Nation. It's so good to be a Netflix subscriber right now. Yeah. I think there's going to be good things. And, you know, I would not be surprised, say, 2-3 years' time, there's going to be coverage in Oscars. Golden Globes.
I mean, they're already winning Golden Globes and Emmys for their TV output. Mm. Their films will start gaining traction. They'll start winning Oscars soon enough.
Yeah.
My mum said she's watched the first episode and loved it. So that's really good. Mm-hmm. She's invested in Netflix just because of it. But I think there's a lot of faith in them as well. They always deliver this Marvel stuff fantastically. We never bitch about anything on Netflix. But there's hope. I always think, like, if anyone's going to bring back Hannibal, it could be them. Mm. You always think to yourself, because they took on Black Mirror. You think they've done it after Series 3, is it? They just took on?
They brought out Series 3.
So you always think that they could just, with the power and money they've got, it's amazing.
And they're currently showing Hannibal on Netflix.
Yeah. I mean, they've just brought back Gilmore Girls. Yeah. I don't know why anyone gives a shit about that, really. But that went off the air a long time ago.
Yeah.
And it's coming back. Is it Netflix that's bringing
it? It is
Gilmore
Netflix, for some.
They can do what they
reason.
Want.
So, exactly. Yeah. The future is wide open and bright for Netflix. Just it's the best £7 you can spend, really.
Yeah, don't put it up too much. Don't go to £20 or anything. No.
But even then, it'd be worth it, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Ben Sobler has said, is there anything more depressing than seeing Kevin Bacon in red PVC selling EE phones with Britney Spears? He's got a point.
He's got a very good point. Ben is literally giving the floor to me as he has no words. It's a disgrace.
When
isn't
I saw the advert, knowing it's the main guy from Tremors, you know, seeing this guy in a red suit doing Baby One More Time, I'm literally thinking to myself, he's either got £1 billion for this. This is literally, they've gone, here's £1 billion. Or has your career gone that low that you will do this? Because he will watch it back. He's got a kid, he's got a wife. There's no dignity in that. It's not even slightly funny, whether it's like someone from Friends doing one of their like catchlines. You know, if Joey's now on an advert for something and he says, how are you doing? Fine. But to do this and scoop this low, you should be ashamed.
You're right. It's undignified. That's exactly what it is. And it's not that his career's on its arse. He's still making movies. He's got a new show coming out on Amazon soon, which I think is called I Love Dick. And he plays a character named Dick in it. And the reviews of the pilot were very good. He's still making films. He doesn't need the money. He's doing this because it's just more cash. It's not cash that he needs, it's just cash that he wants. And it's undignified. And it's a shame because he's a damn good actor.
Because there's no fun in it, surely. I mean, I don't really find Hold Back the River by James Bay fun. And he's there sort of dicking around with a massive hat and a guitar.
The thing that upsets me is I don't like when actors who don't need the money advertise at all. You know, the great late comic Bill Hicks used to say that if you do an advert, you're off the artistic roll call forever. And I love that as a phrase. You're off the artistic roll call forever. And I believe that. But I don't mind if they're not making dicks themselves. So at the minute, Ryan Reynolds is in adverts for BT Infinity. And you see him showing how it works. And then he's hanging off a helicopter. And it's silly and it's funny. But he's not making a dick of himself. Kevin Bacon's making a dick of himself for no apparent reason other than the fact that his bank balance went up a little bit. It's a shame.
Let's move on swiftly. The Real Comic Heroes podcast have said, on air, I'm going to put you on the spot now, each one of us, one from each, your top three animal companions in film.
I have none. ask someone else.
You could have two then, Jim. I'm going to go with Einstein from Back to the Future, which I should have known in the last game. Do you have any?
Can I have Donkey from Shrek?
Yes, that's perfect.
Oh, we include animated stuff. All right,
anything
then.
You want.
I'll go for Sebastian the Crab in The Little Mermaid because he's fun. He's fun for a random sing song.
Isn't he a lobster?
He is. I bet he tastes nice with a bit of garlic
butter.
He's a
crab.
Oh, is he?
It's a different crustacean altogether.
No, no, no. He's a crab, though.
Is he? Yeah, oh, I don't know. I've not seen it in years. Oh. I thought it was a lobster.
He'll taste good with rice.
He would do.
So we'll cook him. Mustache Movie News. God, they don't make it easy for me to say these things. God. It's the first ever Skip the End Christmas Party. What movie would you each show and who would you like to introduce it? I would have Elf.
Yeah.
And I'd have the dwarf that stars in the film so I could make a...
Peter Dinklage.
Yes, I would then make a proper apology for calling the film a Christmas movie with a midget. Yeah. That would be my chance to put right in the world.
I would have Die Hard, of course.
Nice.
And it would be introduced by Bruce Willis, but you would have to be in a vest and barefoot with shards of glass in his feet, just for the authenticity.
I like it.
You'd do it for a tenner right now,
aren't you? Yeah, I think you would. Yeah.
For me, I'd like to go The Nightmare Before Christmas. Oh, had nice. Something a little bit different, and I would pay somebody to dress up as Jack Skellington with a lovely voice. A lovely singing voice.
What's this? What's this? Yeah. There's something in the air.
I know. I wouldn't have Tim Burton because he'd probably go off on one and start showing us a big fish or something like that. But
he'd insist on bringing Johnny Depp with him. Oh, nobody wants that.
No, thank you.
I like all those choices. Lyndon Wells, this is a nice one because it only came through yesterday. So the best film to watch while your wife's in labour. The reason I put this is his wife's currently in labour.
Oh my God, push, yeah.
And
push.
He's trying to look supportive while watching Wayne's World.
Brilliant.
I love that, that he's actually, he's sitting there while his wife's in labour thinking, I'll just ask it to the end of the question. Don't worry about my wife, you know, squeezing one out.
Your answer, Mark, would be Napoleon Dynamite, because that's what you watched when you were supposed to be at your own wedding.
Napoleon Dynamite.
Of course you are.
And I would literally, if the film hadn't finished and my wife's pushing out the baby, I don't care, wait, because I'm watching the rest of the film. And if you squeeze it out before the film ends, we're going to call it Kip.
Have you ever seen the film Mask? Not The Mask, but Mask.
Is that the one with Rocky?
Yeah, Rocky Dennis with his weird head.
Face like a brick.
Yeah, so just to wind up your missus, watch a film about a kid with birth defects.
The Elephant Man, yeah.
I'd go for the obvious one, Knocked Up.
Yeah.
How not to prepare for childhood. Just be a dick.
Ryan Abbott has said, a bit political, so we'll touch a little bit around it. Mm. What movie star would you like to make the next president? That's all right.
That's okay.
I'm going Kurt Russell. I've always said it. I think he'd do a good job. And just imagine there's a campaign, Vote Snake. That would just be great with the eye patch and the iconic image. Yeah. And people would vote for him. Yeah. I'd trust him with my country. Mm.
For me, Meryl Streep. Because she's like the world's loveliest lady.
Plus, she looks like she could be a president.
Well, she's already been the prime minister. She played Thatcher, didn't she?
She did indeed. So the next natural step is, of course, to be president of the United States.
You proud I didn't say Tommy Wiseau?
Yes, I am, yeah. For me, it would have to be President Dwayne The Rock Johnson. Laying the smackdown on Vladimir Putin.
Sarah Nutting has said, she's loving Westworld at the moment and misses the days like this when she can go online and read all the different theories that are coming out at the moment. Mm-hmm. What are you guys thinking? Would you prefer to binge watch and have everything spoiled straight away? Or do you miss this as well? Ooh. Which would you prefer?
I actually had this exact conversation with my friend the other day in the pub. I, generally speaking, I prefer the binge watch model. It's one of the things I love about Netflix, being able to just blast a whole show in a day. But with something like Westworld, because there are so many weird things going on that you don't know, it's kind of nice being able to go off on the internet and read these theories. I think I mentioned this on a previous episode. It reminds me of Lost. That's what I used to do. You'd watch an episode of Lost, then you'd go online, read the theories, look up all the Easter eggs that had been in the episode, and join in with a community of like-minded people, and this is the same. So I like both models, but as far as it goes for Westworld, I'm willing to wait a week. It's worth it.
Nice. Everything Ben said. I do miss talking about Lost with the people at work the next day. And even Game of Thrones, you get it, don't you?
Yeah.
But my patience is running out. And the older I get, I want everything straight away. I am terrible like that. I'm at the point now where sometimes Sky will do a showing of Game of Thrones at 2 a.m. Mm-hmm. I'll watch it as soon as I get in from work. Even though I could just wait an hour and watch it on Sky Atlantic, I stupidly will download it off the Sky box and watch it straight away. And I realise I'm terrible at it. When Hannibal was out, I was reading online the spoilers and ruining it for myself. I'm terrible.
Yeah.
You think, like, the whole binge-watching thing has probably only been around for about, what, 3 years? Maybe 4 years?
Yeah.
It's not been around that long.
It was when the whole kind of DVD box set thing started happening. People started buying things and getting into shows that way.
Yeah.
And it's just spiraled from there now that we have these online services like Netflix and Amazon.
Couple more questions. Jessica Phillips has said, is there a movie that you would actually like the Men in Black toy for that could wipe from your existence of your memory?
Crash.
And you're not allowed to say a Kevin Smith film.
Crash.
That's to Ben, I think.
Crash. I don't want to see...
Is that really
legs.
Your choice? Because for me...
It's very fresh in the mind.
Yeah.
It's hard to not forget about leg sex.
For me, it would be Interstellar, because Christopher Nolan, for me, is probably my favourite filmmaker right now. If I look at his CV, him and Affleck, and that's his where he's gone wrong. So for me, knowing Ben Affleck's got a new film out soon, he's free for free, and we keep saying, oh, he's perfect. Nolan, for me, is whatever, it's 7 for 7, and then he ruined it, and the streak ended. And if it wasn't around, Dunkirk would have been the next one, and we'd have been all right, probably. So I am very disappointed.
I'm going to pick mine, but for a different reason. It's not a film that I want to forget entirely. It's a film I want to forget momentarily or for a bit. I'd say Blade Runner, because if I can have that flash and forget it, I'd be watching it for the first time again. Oh. I'd be experiencing it as a newbie for the first time, and that is worth its weight in
gold. You know what? To kind of jump on that bandwagon a little bit, I recently saw Nocturnal Animals.
Mm.
This is my favourite film of 2016. If you have not gone and seen it, please do. I would do it for that exact same reason. I've never felt that kind of feeling for a film in a very, very long time.
I really want to see that.
Please
now.
She
says this and then she watches it again and realises it's only a seven.
Oh no! When will I learn?
You sound too much like me. Best film ever! Yeah. It's not.
Deadpool still a nine, Mark.
That's a tough one, isn't it? The very final question went to Gemma again. Aww. Please, listeners, there's three of us on this podcast. Two of us have been here for 2 years, you know mm-hmm. what I mean? Andy Wright, me and Ben have had something similar to this, but there's a bit more added on.
Okay.
You're sent to Mars tomorrow.
Right.
You're allowed one book, one DVD, and this is what I like new, and one action figure. What are you going to pick?
Oh my goodness.
Do you want a bit of time to think about
it? Can I? If you guys can get your ideas out, then I'll just jump on the back.
One DVD to take with you.
Yeah.
One book.
Uh-huh.
And an action figure.
Crikey.
I will say, because we've done this before where the world was ending, and we went to an island and you allowed one film. And I've always said it, and you've heard it many a times. I sound like a broken record, but Big, because it reminds me of my childhood.
Yeah.
It's a really nice film and it'll make me feel good. So if Mars is shit and I'm struggling to breathe with no oxygen and stuff, I can watch Big and I'll feel good again. And it's a film that I've never got bored of. As far as a book, I know it sounds absolutely ridiculous, but when I was on holiday last week, I took the audiobook for The Disaster Artist by Greg Sestero.
Yeah.
And his whole experience of the room. And listening to him do it again and doing the impressions and hearing all these stories again has really made me realise how amazing this book is. And I would take it again because I read it again and again and I laugh myself to literally, I'm just laughing and laughing because it's true. And you're reading it like this can't have happened, like the auditions again and that whole thing was incredible. As far as an action figure would go, I struggle.
You can have a think on that. I think mine would be, books wise, the book that I probably read the most, that I will read probably once every couple of years, is American Psycho. So I'd take that because I know it has repeat value. I'd want to take a comedy, I think, rather than a drama. I'd want something to keep my spirits up. So I'd take Step Brothers on DVD, just, you know.
That's nice.
Boats and Hoes. Mm. And then action figure, my favourite action figure that I've ever had. Back in the late 80s, early 90s, I used to have lots and lots of wrestling figures, as most kids our age did. And my favourite one, despite being a god-awful wrestler, was Brutus the Barber Beefcake.
The shears!
He had the little shears in his hand and his pink tights that were slashed down the side. I used to love Brutus the Barber Beefcake.
That's incredible.
The dry perm mullets as well.
So that's what I'd take with me.
Nice.
Okay, I'm going to have Coco beware because he came with a little parrot.
Yeah.
You've got to pick a wrestling one now.
Okay, well, for my action figure, I would of course go for the Ted DiBiase with the $1 million belt.
Of course.
I used to have that.
Briefcase as well.
No, not at the time. But he was dressed in like this tuxedo with like a little bow tie. Mm-hmm. So I would totally go for him. For a book, and this is for pure nostalgic reasons, I would go for 101 Dalmatians by Dodie Smith. I believe that's who it's by. Okay. If it isn't, I haven't got my phone on me, so what are you going to do?
Well, you say you haven't got your phone on. It rang earlier, midway through the recording, so clearly you have. Amateur.
And for a DVD, and it's a film I enjoy watching over and over again, I'll never get bored of, I would go Shaun of the Dead. I know it's the end of the world, but hey. At least you can go to the Winchester and have a pint and wait for it all to blow over.
Perfect. Mm-hmm. I love that. Maybe Mars Attacks. That'd be pretty cool.
Yeah.
Or the Martians.
Yeah.
The Martian would tell you how to science the shit out of it.
Yeah. Education. And have fun while doing it.
Why not?
Keep your questions coming. The best way to reach us is go on skiptotheend.co.uk. And on there, you've got links to our Instagram, our email address, our Twitter, our Facebook, and anything else you need is all on there. So visit that and we'll answer our questions again in 2 weeks' time.
That brings us to the end of another Skip to the End podcast. We've been gone 3 weeks. There's been turbulent times, but it's all fine now, isn't it? Because we're back.
That's all that matters.
You've listened to that. You've heard the last hour and a half, 2 hours, whatever it's been. It's all
we're
good,
back.
Isn't it?
We're all good.
It's done. We've done it. We've done it, guys.
Nothing ever really changes, does it?
And these two have got spirits to drink tonight. You know,
Mount Gay.
Yes, Mount Gay.
Need to get some mixers, maybe Coca-Cola
and Skittles,
and a well choreographed dance routine.
Brilliant. So, episode 59 coming up, getting towards the big 6-0.
6-0?
Big one. 6-0. Yeah. So what have we got as the main review, Gemma?
It's only bloody Bad Santa 2.
Bad Santa 2, you say? What? Sounds jolly good.
Rather. I am really looking forward to that. I'm not going to lie. The first one was great, and I think it's been long enough and not too much of like a Dumb and Dumber 2. I think it'll be all right.
Do you know what, Mark? I'm just looking forward to seeing Thurman Merman.
Have you seen him now? He's literally 28 or 29. He still looks about 12.
Still a big boy. And our topic of conversation, Gemma.
It's going to be the top three most shocking moments in film.
Indeed it is. What's our rewatch, Mark?
The Dude Abides. It's time for The Big Lebowski. Excellent. And I want people to literally get some vodka, get some Kahlua, some milk, get a rug, get everything, and join us.
Gown, all of it. Bowling ball.
Bowling ball, yep.
Tara Reid.
Yeah, she's not doing much. You can get her.
But yeah.
About 8 quid an hour, it's gonna be good.
She'll be there with a chainsaw.
A chainsaw.
Chainsaw.
And we're also going to be movie mass debating over Joaquin Phoenix, which is going to be a great chat. Take listener questions, we'll give away prizes, all the other kind of business.
You're forgetting the final round.
And the final round,
oh my
of course.
God.
These two.
Top of the props. Me versus Gemma for all the marbles. It's going to be the big one.
It's going to be hard.
People are already putting bets on. I've seen it on Paddy Power and all the sites. At the moment, Ben is favourite.
So I'm a rank outsider. Yeah. Standard.
Yes.
Mark, be prepared, though, because Mark's going to bonus. It's going to be like prop one, a shoe. Prop two, the other shoe.
Prop three, the laces. The heel. What was the actual film? Yeah. The Wedding Singer.
So enjoy your next 2 weeks. We'll be back for you then.